Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Stuff Podcast with Jonathan Lack.
And Sean Chapman.
We are here today to talk about stuff this week on the show. Mm-hmm. We are doing a little pre-E3 chat.
Pre-E3,
because E3 2018 is coming up next week, big gaming conference where people will be theoretically announcing a bunch of stuff, but most of it has gotten leaked.
Yes, it'll be a lot of people going out on stage. It's like, did you see Kotaku, like, last week? It's just that stuff. Okay, that's good. Let's go to the after party.
E3 should be hosted in an old, like, ship in a harbor that's got a bunch of holes in it, just as a giant metaphor.
Yes, as it is literally sinking and they're desperately trying to, like, finish out their press conference as the press are drowning.
They saved Microsoft for last because they probably won't have anything anyway.
Yes, it'll be quick.
Yeah. All right. No offense to the Microsoft fans, although we've probably already pissed you off.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to talk about that. We are going to do a bigger in-depth talk about Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight and Persona 3 Dancing Star Knight.
Persona 5 Dancing Star Knight.
God damn. I thought I was focusing on the title and not the number.
Yes.
It's very hard. Persona 5 Dancing Star Knight, which have had their Japanese releases. Still no word on the English releases, but we have played both of them very thoroughly.
Yes. Well, yes. I have not finished Dancing Star Knight, but I have platinumed Dancing Moon Knight.
And I have platinumed Dancing Moon Knight. I have platinumed Dancing Star Knight with an asterisk. We'll get to that. But I still think it's worth saying we've played them thoroughly. So,
yes.
So we are going to just... It's basically just going to be we're going to gush over them. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much critical insight we can give other than... Man, that was really cool when they all danced to the Velvet Room song and they were in the Velvet Room outfits and it was like all neon. That was great.
Yes.
That's going to be like what it is. But that'll be at the end of the show if for some reason you're not interested in Persona.
Or this unreleased in English and Japanese Persona rhythm game spinoff.
Yeah.
No, it's maybe a slightly niche audience, though we have cultivated that niche audience on our podcast for sure.
We have. Again... We have like 28% of our listeners are in Japan, so hey.
I mean, we did a whole podcast topic that was like the top 10 fucking Persona songs or whatever. So.
Which needs to be updated, frankly.
It does, yeah. So there's some more Lotus juice that needs to go on that list.
Podcast 300, y'all. All right, anyway, so we are going to be getting into all of that. The news is going to be rolled into the E3 stuff, so we will get there when we get there. But Sean, let's start with some stuff.
Yeah, I don't have any stuff. All my stuff is dancing to Persona songs, both in the games and in real life.
Yes. Here's my stuff.
Okay.
So, you guys might have noticed if you follow me on Twitter, at Jonathan Lack, that I changed my Twitter avatar this week to what I am calling Pride Karibo.
Yes,
because it is a screenshot from Yu-Gi-Oh! Where Karibo, the little puffball monster Yugi uses a lot, even though he's very weak, because, you know, it's like a metaphor for the show. There's more to Karibo than you see on the surface. But Karibo, in this one episode, is combined with a rainbow card and becomes a rainbow-colored Karibo that I'm affectionately calling Pride Karibo, because I was watching this episode on June 1st, the first day of Pride Month.
Right.
What we would call National Pride Month if we had a president interested in recognizing it as such, like we did in previous years. In any case, it's Pride Month. I'm like, you know what? Pride Karibo is awesome. I'm going to change that to that. Also as kind of a coping mechanism because it was from a really bad episode of Yu-Gi-Oh!
I can only imagine. It looks like it is filler. It has to be a filler episode, right?
Oh, it's not just filler. Sean, let me tell you where I am in Yu-Gi-Oh! Right now. So this is what I'm trying to transition into. You guys, I've been filling you in every couple weeks on my journey through Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Monsters, the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Series in Japanese, which is on Crunchyroll, which is awesome. Thank you, Crunchyroll. Which I feel like I just want to say every week. Thank you, Crunchyroll.
It's like, it's so nice. I feel we do the story every single time, but compared to when we were kids and having to try to watch anime, it's so much better.
It was either you bought your DVDs 3 episodes at a time, if they were nice enough to include like Japanese on there, which like Dragon Ball did at a certain point, but not a lot of other anime, like Yu-Gi-Oh! Didn't. Or it was, and I tried this at one point with Yu-Gi-Oh!, you would go on eBay and try to find like Chinese bootlegs with good enough subtitles that you could read them. It was a minefield, you know? Mm-hmm. Or sometimes fan subs. But fan subs in the early days of the internet were also tough because of downloading and everything.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, so I'm watching Yu-Gi-Oh! Officially translated in on Crunchyroll, which is great. And so if you know anything about Yu-Gi-Oh!, you'll know the biggest arc in the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Series is called Battle City. It is an epic. Like, it is in the manga. The manga is 38 volumes. Battle City is 16 graphic novels. It is very long. There's no Dragon Ball arc that is 16 graphic novels.
No.
It is a very long arc. And But it's also great. I think it's probably the best overall stretch of Yu-Gi-Oh! And it is the rare anime arc that is that long that gets better as it goes along. Like, it is truly a freight train that, like, starts slow, and by the end you do not want to get off. But the anime people had a different idea, which is that it's smack dab in the middle of Battle City. So Battle City has, like, three phases. There's the part where they're in the city, and they all have to go around and duel other duelists and get their locator cards, the puzzle cards in Japanese, so they can find the finals. Then when they get to the finals, you have the semifinals part where the eight duelists duel each other in the first round, and that's on Kaiba's giant ego blimp in the sky. So they duel in the sky, and somehow all their cards don't blow away. But you don't think about that.
Their cards weighted with lead.
Yes.
You know, so they both play their card game and then get lead poisoning later.
Yes.
It's tragic.
That's going to be one of those future Yu-Gi-Oh! Spin-offs. Is they're going to go back and Jinochi is going to just... He's going to have severe brain damage from all his years playing Duel Monsters.
Yep. Yugi's in a wheelchair. It's just... It's rough.
Yes. Anyway, but when you get to the semifinals of Battle City, that's when that arc gets really good because... Like, you finally kind of Merrick, the main villain of that arc, takes center stage, and in this amazing four-parter, Merrick kind of gets taken over by this evil side of his personality and becomes Dark Merrick, who has one of the greatest villain voices I've ever heard in an anime. Like, the first thing that evil Merrick does is this three-part duel against the character Mai, Kujaku Mai, or Mai Valentine in English, because that's how they rolled in the early 2000s.
To be fair, that could very easily have been a Japanese version of an English name.
Yes, it could have, yes. Anyway, but there's this duel where he's dueling her, and he makes it a shadow game, and just tortures this poor woman in the most sadistic ways. And, like, my brother was watching these three episodes with me. I was just, like, shocked, like, because what he's talking about, like, he's talking about, like, you know, brutally murdering her and sending her to the demons and all this, like, horrible stuff. And it's an amazing villain voice, great character. The arc is, like, getting so fraught with tension at this point because, like, people are not dying, but, like, falling into severe comas left and right. And there's all this, like, it's getting way out of hand. And it's just, it's the peak of, like... That thing, you know, if you like Yu-Gi-Oh!, you love about Yu-Gi-Oh!, which is just how dramatic these fucking card games get. And it's fantastic. And then the last couple episodes of this stretch of the semifinals really are all set up for the home stretch of Battle City, which is you're going to get to the finals, and Yugi is going to have to face off against Merrick, and Kaiba has his own motivations. Like, you're winnowing it down to who the final people are going to be. You're learning about Merrick's backstory. They're putting all the pieces in place for this big final act. But in the anime, there was a problem. They had caught up to the manga.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, it's never an easy situation. But what they decide to do is that right in the middle of this, when the semifinals are done and about to start the finals, which in the manga, it's just the next chapter is the finals. There's no break. They do something where the battle blimp that they are all on gets sucked away in like a vortex because an evil villain, a new antagonist named Noah, who is this little kid, hacks the blimp and takes it off course, and then kidnaps all the main characters and puts them inside a virtual reality game because he has a beef with Kaiba, which becomes clear over the course of the arc. This arc is 24 episodes long.
Fuck.
It is a full half year. Like, if you were watching this in Japanese at the time, that would be 6 months off from the main story. And it was all to buy time because they were just way too close to the manga, which I am sympathetic towards. I have seen this done better, I will say, because it is a hard turn. It would be like, I don't know, if in the middle of, like, let's say the Android saga of Dragon Ball Z, if Cell, like, announces the Cell games, and there is a little filler there, but, like, what if Goku then, like, went to space and had to fight, like, 10 space people over 30 episodes? You'd feel like the momentum had been lost a little bit.
Yeah, like, they just stuffed two Garlic Jr. sagas right in there.
Yeah, because people make fun of the Garlic Jr. saga. It's only 10 episodes.
Yeah.
It also, like, is very easy to skip because it comes between other stories.
Yes, and it is never referenced again.
Never referenced again. So it's, like, if you're going to put a filler arc, that's the place to put it. This is the weirdest place you could put it. And there is a really strong delta on Yu-Gi-Oh! Between the quality of writing done by the anime team and the quality of writing done by the author, Kazuki Takahashi.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, and there had been some other filler episodes in Yu-Gi-Oh! Up to this point, but it would be like one episode and you're like, whatever, and you move on.
Yeah.
But now it's like they're having to steer the ship for 24 episodes. Oh, it's bad. It's bad. It's so bad, Sean. The two episodes that, the thing that Pride Kuribo comes from is a three-parter that kicks this off, where, so the whole thing is that all the filler arcs on Yu-Gi-Oh! Are about corporate intrigue involving Kaiba's business, Kaiba Corp.
Yeah.
And this one is a sequel to a previous crappy three-episode filler arc where Kaiba's board of directors, the Big Five, Kaiba decided to fire all of them because they kidnapped his little brother, which yes. I think is a fireable
yeah.
offense.
I remember this arc yeah. now, yeah.
And they put him into their virtual world they've built, and so there's a little virtual world arc, but now it's a big one, because the Big Five were stranded in cyberspace, they've come back, and they take Kaiba and the other people from Yu-Gi-Oh! Into the virtual world because they want to defeat them in duels and then take over their bodies.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, which has some unfortunate implications when one of them is a 55-year-old man who wants to inhabit the body of 16-year-old Anzu.
Or right,
Taya yes. in English.
Yeah,
they don't. There's a story there to tell. They're not telling it in a 2001 anime episode.
No, yeah, this it's not a late night show. This no. is prime time anime.
Yeah, so you know, so that's the thing. And you know, I have seen this arc in English when I was a kid. I remember it getting better near the end when like Noah, the new antagonist, kind of takes center stage, and the Kaiba stuff. They really push the main story in. And maybe that'll happen, but it is so much worse than I remembered. And remember, I'm watching it in Japanese, so most of this is way better than I remembered.
Right.
Because it's the original version with, you know, far superior voice acting and music and writing and all that.
Yeah, and not edited down yeah. with, like, weird American rules and stuff. Yeah. yeah.
Everyone doesn't have a faux Australian accent or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, they're not all talking about the Shadow Realm.
Yeah, exactly. But it's bad. So Pride Kuribo comes from a three-parter where the first of the Big Five inhabits the body of a duel monster called Deep Sea Warrior and duels Yugi okay, yeah. over three episodes. Now, a three-episode duel, normally, that's you'd be like, okay, that's a standard length. It's going to be a little bit of like people on the sidelines gawking, but if you've ever watched anime, you're used to that.
Yeah, it's just a lot of cutaways to people going, I can't believe he played that card. And, yes. And then somebody's like, if Yugi's played this card, then that means he's anticipated this and doing this and blah, 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 blah. And he's like, this the whole sequence wasn't in the manga, but it's a decent way to sort of pad this out.
Yes, and it's fine. Like, it's part of the deal when you watch anime.
Yes, there's a lot of like random flashbacks to previous episodes yes. featuring the characters. Yeah,
exactly. But this one is so unbelievably elongated. The duel itself is about six moves. Like, not six turns. It's about six moves.
Like six cards played?
Pretty much. Over three fucking episodes. There's one point. The second episode starts with Yugi doing an attack and falling into a trap. And spends the rest of the episode thinking if he should attack again, knowing the trap is still there. And for some reason, Yugi, who has been very well established over 100 episodes now as the king of duelists,
yes, decides, he's very good at this game.
Yes, decides at the end of the episode to attack again, and it ends where we let. No, I shouldn't even say that. The trap happens at the end of the first episode. The second episode is completely him wondering if he should do it again. He does it again at the end of the second, and the third starts us in the same place we were. It is, and it's got all these cutaways.
It's like a filler episode inside of a filler episode.
It really is, because it's also like you were cutting away to all the other characters like in new places in the virtual world, and it's all really boring. The only good part of all of it, and it's the thing that is going to keep me going through this if I can, is the Kaiba stuff is good. Like, that was the kernel they had, is they decided to take a little bit of Kaiba's backstory as depicted in the manga and like make it the basis for this arc. And that's actually not a bad idea, because at this point, like the episodes that are about to come in Battle City, a lot of the Kaiba stuff is about him reckoning with his past. Like in the manga, that's actually the end of Battle City is the last you ever see of Kaiba. He's in the right. show for a lot longer, but that's it for him in the manga. So like we're reaching the pinnacle of his character arc. So I think going back and doing more about his past is fine. They've couched it inside of this horrible setup for a story, but it is like the one shining spot of these episodes is when you cut away to Kaiba and like having flashbacks and like you start to see how he is the way he is. All of that's really good, and you realize, okay, the anime staff did have a good idea here, but they had a 6-episode good idea.
Yeah.
They did not have a 24-episode good idea. So
I mean, a 24-episode good idea is like two full anime series yeah. worth of good ideas.
Oh yeah, it is. So I have slowed down a lot. But let me finish. So okay, the Pride yeah. Kuribo, he comes from the next two episodes where Anzu, again, Taya in English, she meets the next member of the Big Five and has to duel him. And this guy has inhabited the body of a penguin and has a bunch of like penguins in the virtual world who do his bidding and like kidnap Anzu and bring her to yeah. him.
Truly, if you can inhabit the body of any animal or like real or fictional, because it's a virtual world, the penguin is the animal I would yeah. pick. I wouldn't be a tiger. I wouldn't be a dragon. You know, I wouldn't be a giant bear. I would be a penguin.
Yeah.
And this incredibly is, intimidating.
This is a two-episode duel. It is not as unnecessarily elongated as the first one, but it's also with a character who doesn't know how to duel in Anzu,
right, yeah.
So it's kind of boring. And there are two redeeming things about it. One is Pride Kuribo. No, he's from the other one. I forgot. Sorry, I'm getting them all mixed up because it's very bad. The one redeeming thing about this is it is funny to see them try to animate a penguin with flippers play a card game.
I had fun
that's,
with it.
That's pretty
good.
Do
they just stick the card onto the end of
pretty
the flipper?
Much.
Okay, because
yeah.
There's two ways. You either just stick it on and say, fuck it, or you like try to wrap the edge of the flipper around the card,
not,
which sounds way harder.
They don't really do that. It looks like he has like he just sticks to his hand.
Yeah. It's a very sticky penguin.
The other mildly redeeming thing is that the penguin character has such laughably bad motivations that it comes back around to being kind of awesome. So here's, I'm going to tell you the backstory of Penguin Dude in Yu-Gi-Oh!
Okay.
Remember, this is one of the Big Five, the board of directors of Kaiba Corporation, which in the fiction of Yu-Gi-Oh! Is the biggest company in the world.
Yes.
Yes.
So this is like a Steve Jobs-esque figure
yes.
in the world of Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah. And his whole thing is that, I'm not going to be able to get through this, as a kid, he was, like, abused and neglected by his parents.
Okay.
And yeah. in his moments of solitude and sadness, he started reading about and researching penguins. And fell in love with penguins because they were really cool animals that, like, you know, really cared for each other down in Antarctica.
Sure, that's
and,
a... I could see that that's a children's book interpretation of a penguin, yeah.
Yes. And so he, like, became obsessed with penguins. And he made it his mission in life to, like, bring his love of penguins to the world. And when he got on the board at Kaiba Corp, his one desire was that Kaiba, at one of their amusement parks, would open a penguin zoo at Kaiba Land. And they even have a flashback of him, like, in Kaiba's office. And Kaiba has the best retort to this. He's like, if you want a black and white animal, go get a panda bear. Which really should be just a standard retort we all use.
Yeah.
And because of this, because Kaiba would not pay for his penguin zoo in Japan, I assume,
yeah.
which I don't think is a hospitable place for penguins.
Yeah.
I think the humidity might get to them. Anyway, he got really mad at Kaiba, was filled with a lust for vengeance, and has made it his life's mission to, you know, get a new body, go back into the world, take over Kaiba Corp, and use their resources to build penguin zoos.
I've got a question for you, Jonathan. Does he ever address the big flaw here of why doesn't he leave Kaiba Corp and start with, like, he has to be absurdly rich, right?
Yes.
He's on the board of this company.
Yes.
Start your own fucking company and make a fucking penguin zoo. You don't need Kaiba to do that. This is like Kaiba Corporation is not obviously they're like they have their fingers in a lot of pies, I assume.
But
they don't go into it. But they're not like it's not like, oh, I wanna get into like zoology and build zoos and stuff, so I'm gonna join fucking like Tencent or Apple.
Yeah.
You know, it's like no. You well, don't this- like study fucking zoology or, like, animal biology at a school, and then, like, make that your job, and then make, like, a small zoo.
Here's the funniest thing, is that in the lore that this arc is fleshing out,
uh-huh.
the whole idea is that Kaiba took over the corporation from his stepdad. And when it's kind of like Tony Stark and Stark Industries. Under his stepdad, Kaiba Corp was a munitions company. It's a global munitions company. It is heavily implied that the Big Five were there pre-Seto Kaiba.
Oh, okay.
On the munitions company. And then Kaiba comes in and decides to drop all the munition stuff and become a game company so they, like, bring joy to people, that kind of thing. So the Penguin Dude got into this when it was a munitions company.
Yeah, it's like, I want, like, my life's passion since I was a small child who suffered severe abuse by my parents has been to make a zoo full of penguins that people can go to and find joy in the penguin. And so my first step is to get on the board of an international arms manufacturer and dealer. It's a very, I think, innovative step to accomplishing his dream.
It's certainly creative.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily effective, but it's creative. So yeah, I will say my Yu-Gi-Oh! Rewatch has slowed to a crawl at the moment. At the end of, like, where Battle City was, I think one night I did, like, 7 episodes. It was so good.
Mm-hmm.
I've done 5 in the last week.
This is, like, kind of one a day.
Yeah, like, not even that. There's been some days where I haven't gotten through more than one. It's not great.
Do you think Luckily, that you're going to stick this out or skip it?
I want to get through this arc because okay. I saw it as a kid. I want to see where it goes. And I do know it's not that many episodes, and on the other side of it is like one of the best runs of the entire series. Here's the other downside, though. In the manga, Battle City is very near the end. After Battle City, it jumps into the final arc where the dark Yugi side of the Yugi persona, Yu-Gi-Oh, goes into his memories of ancient Egypt, and there's the whole ancient Egypt arc, and that's how the manga ends. In the show, they decided, we're not ready for this thing to end. It's our cash cow. Mm-hmm. So there is a good, like, year and a half of filler before you get to the Egypt stuff. And, you know, this is like a 50-episode arc that comes. And in English, that's where I dropped out. I finished the manga. I never finished the anime as a kid.
I don't know if I even ever got as far as where you are now in English. Because I was never super dedicated to it.
Yeah.
I just, like, kind of, like, picked it up.
Yeah.
Whenever I was kind of in the mood, I think maybe you were already farther than I ever got.
Yeah. Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a weird show because it's already only a partial manga adaptation because it doesn't do the first seven volumes. And within that, like, they add all this other stuff to it. And my understanding is that when they do get to the Egypt stuff, it's fairly different from the manga. So they do Duelist Kingdom and they do Battle City faithfully. And then it's a lot of other stuff. So I'm interested in seeing some of it. I don't know if I'll get all of it after this. But yeah, it's been a trip. It's very interesting. I don't know. It kind of makes me curious to watch some of the spin-offs. Because at that point, there was no Kazuki Takahashi. There was no manga they're running off of. So the anime team, it's run for another 10 years. They must be doing something right.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people who say Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, the Duel Academy spinoff, starts kind of rough but gets really good. Like, there are a lot of people who say in Japanese that show is great. And in fact, that show gets so weird and dark, it never even aired a final season in English.
Huh.
They never finished the dub. So, and that is all on Crunchyroll as well. So I'm curious. But yeah, I'm in a weird phase of this show. And again, like, I've seen my share of filler in anime. I do think the virtual world arc in Yu-Gi-Oh! Is the weirdest placement of filler I've ever seen. Because it's just smack dab middle of your story arc.
Cool. The one thing you have not told us, Jonathan, is where the fuck does Pride Kuribo come in?
Okay. Pride Kuribo is how Yugi beats the Deep Sea Warrior guy in that first duel in episode 3.
Okay.
Because there's this whole new system where you have to choose a deck master who's a monster who, like, plays on your... It's a whole thing.
Okay.
Yugi accidentally chooses Kuribo. He wants the Black Magician. Kuribo comes out. Kuribo turns out to be useful in the end. And basically...
Which is something that's never happened in the actual card game, by the way.
I'm actually glad you let me brought this up. Because both of the duels in this arc so far end with the main character, from what I can gather, just cheating. Because the writers...
They always play fast and loose with the rules of the show, from what I remember.
They do, but, like, in a way that, like, makes sense in the diegesis of the show.
Sure.
This is, like, the end of that first duel in the virtual world arc, Yugi versus the Deep Sea Warrior guy, is... I literally could not tell you what is supposed to have happened within the rules of the game. Because what it is Yugi has to... So there's that guy's trap, right? That he spent two episodes running into. And it's... So the guy has monsters on his field. Yugi can't attack the monsters or he'll get into the trap. He has to attack the guy directly, but there's monsters in the way. So he gets this card called Rainbow Miracle or something. And for some reason, this card can combine with Kuribo. For reasons that are not explained, Kuribo becomes Pride Kuribo, and then Kuribo jumps across the field to the other player and creates a rainbow bridge. And then Yugi's Gaia the Swift Knight, which I think has the ability it can attack the it can be summoned without sacrifices, but they don't say that, so it looks like Yu-Gi-Oh just cheats and summons a level 7 monster. And Gaia is able to run across Kuribo's rainbow bridge and kill the guy who I think had more life points. So like the math doesn't even work out. It's so nonsensical. I'll admit I was only paying about 50% attention at this point, but it was still like, what am I supposed to take away from this episode? That made no fucking sense. So there's that. And then in the Anzu one, her deck master is the Dark Magician girl. The Black Magician girl.
Okay, yeah.
And she plays a card at the end that allows Black Magician girl to summon a Black Magician to fight with her, even though one of the whole points of the story is that Anzu did not have a Dark Magician in her deck.
Oh.
And so the Dark Magician comes out of Yugi's deck, who is watching over there, and the penguin guy is like, how'd you do that? That's cheating! And then he dies, and I'm like, yeah, that's cheating, Anzu! How did that happen?
It's like, I just love, like, then you have, like, Junoichi gets into a duel, and then at the end, it's just, like he, like, wins and pulls this, like, amazing combination of cards out, and then the camera just pans down, you see he's got, like, a little thing on his wrist that, like, shoots cards out, like yeah. Lando in Solo.
It is weird. I don't get it. You know, because one of the fun things about Yu-Gi-Oh! Is that in the manga, the like, official story, and in the good episodes of the anime, Kazuki Takahashi is very good at writing these duels to be exciting and strategic and deep and multi-layered, and, like, they're exciting as a lot is going on. And these ones are, like, little kid versions of that. It's really bad.
Yeah, they're just, like, making up the rules. It's like,
yeah.
How is Yugi going to get out of this one? What if we just made some bullshit up? Okay.
What if Karibo could become a rainbow?
Rainbow Karibo.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Rainbow Karibo is a real Karibo that looks nothing like the Rainbow Karibo from the show, which I assume this card comes in later. He doesn't even look like a Karibo. He looks like a parasite. I would not want Rainbow Karibos, honestly. The other, the Pride Karibo from the show looks cute. I mean, he looks like Karibo with, they put like a Photoshop gradient filter on him. But
that's part of why I love it.
It's like the cheapest effect. Yeah.
All right.
It's good.
Well, anyway, that was a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! Talk, but that was fun. All right.
If you watch some bad anime filler, you got to get it off your chest. I understand that.
It's entertaining. You know, I'm watching it so you don't have to.
Sure.
All right.
I wasn't going to, but thank you for taking the bullet anyways.
Seriously, if you want to watch Yu-Gi-Oh!, great show. You can just skip these 24 episodes. Yeah. You do not have to be a completionist like me.
That's what I would say for almost every single, like, long-running shonen anime. Just skip the fucking filler. Just look up something online and skip the filler. There are lots of resources available for you to make that easy.
All right. Sean, you want to talk some E3?
Let's talk about E3, Jonathan.
All right. So next week, we are going to be doing our full E3 coverage. For the first time, we're doing it daily. We are going to have podcasts Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday morning, recorded Sunday, Monday, Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
After. So we're going to do the Saturday and Sunday shows. We're going to record those Sunday night. The Monday shows Monday night. The Tuesday show, which is Nintendo and anything else that comes up, Tuesday night as like a wrap-up. And those will be out in the morning as daily podcasts. So we're going to get it all out there. We're not doing just one giant 7-hour podcast this year.
Yeah, because that was unreasonable. And by the time we got to like the Nintendo and Sony stuff at the end, it was like, we have to end this podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because you remember what we also had that week?
What was
that? We had Twin Peaks and Doctor Who last year. And the Twin Peaks one, I think, was part 8. The really famous like avant-garde nuclear episode.
Yeah.
So we had a lot that one. That's still our longest podcast. Anywho, one tradition that is not changing, however, is we're doing our speculation podcast.
Yes.
Got to lay the groundwork and see where we're going. And it's extra pertinent this year because we've kind of got to lay out what do we already know, which is a lot.
It's a different, I mean, like E3 has always been, well, I can't say always, but in like the modern era of E3s from like the late 360 PS3 era to now, which is when I started paying attention, E3 has been very leaky from my experience. Of, like, there have always been weird leaks coming out, like, during the show. Like, one thing I did, because I made a whole sort of, like, outline of stuff that we know, stuff that is, like, probably going to happen in, like speculation of, like, what if, like, Microsoft had video games up there? Well, that would be interesting. And in the process of doing that, I opened up some of my old E3 notes, which was a very interesting experience. And yeah, so I've got lots of weird stuff there, but anyway, so with this E3, what I was going to say was with my old E3 notes, I was reminded that Jeff Keighley leaked the $500 price tag for the Xbox One X, what was then called the Scorpio, like an hour before that show launched.
Yes.
So it's like it's a very very leaky show. This one, however, has been leakier than any other one, and the like, which listeners will know if they've been listening to the last couple of weeks of episodes, where our video game news segment has always been like, fucking Walmart from Canada just leaked all this bullshit. Apparently we're getting Forza Horizons 5 or whatever.
That's the thing, is that it's been a lot of sloppy leaks. Like, it's not like, you know, an intrepid reporter hunting down the story. We've had a little of that. It's more been, Ubisoft accidentally sent out an Assassin's Creed Odyssey keychain, and now we know that there's a new Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, and then I just love that like, it's like this little, like, pin drops, and then every single video game reporter on the planet is like, oh, that is enough of a clarification that now we can all run this story. Yes. They were already probably going to run before E3, but you find it like, because it's like The detail and depth and speed with which all those Assassin's Creed stories came out tells you that they already knew about this and, like, almost had enough of justification to be like, let's just run the story, and then that drops. It's like, okay, like, every site on the planet just ran the story.
I think that's the other element, is that at this point we have a mature enough gaming press with deep enough connections that everybody in town knows all the stories. A lot of them keep them to themselves for, you know, various reasons of sourcing and whatnot. But then something like this will leak. Like, the other thing was, like, when the new Pokemon game leaked.
Yeah.
Then you heard, like, oh, yeah, every single game reporter knew about that game.
Yes.
Every single one. And it's just, it's a funny, I mean, this happens in real news, too, obviously. You know, you have your sources, and you don't say everything they tell you, because that would be, you're not a news site at that point. You're a weird blogger or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, it's a very interesting time, and I wonder if there's any way to kind of reverse that trend in future years.
I think maybe it's enough of a signal to tell video game companies to stop being, like, stuck up weird, like, Iron Curtain fortresses and be more like the movie industry. That's like, nothing leaks from the movie industry because they don't give a fuck. They just tell you, yeah, we're gonna make a fucking, like, Shazam movie in 5 years or something.
Yeah.
It's like, and that's why, like, half of the movies you've ever heard of are never actually made, because they just, like, tell you about it as soon as, like, a random producer has the vague inkling they want to make a movie.
It's why Disney hasn't, like, blacklisted the Hollywood Reporter for breaking the Boba Fett story.
Right.
It's like, that's just business.
Yes.
It happens. All right. So, Sean, where do you want to start?
Let's start at the beginning. I have I have run through and made this outline with, I was trying to be pretty thorough. I think I have every leak on here and a lot of speculation. I basically made it in the order of the order that the shows are going to play this year's E3. Because for whatever reason, every fucking year, a bunch of the people like Microsoft have decided, fuck it. We've had this Monday slot forever. What if we just went on Sunday? It's like, fuck off. Anyways, we're going to start with Electronic Arts with their EA Access Play bullshit show, whatever they're calling it. That's not actually at E3, but it is at E3 that is going to be on Saturday. So, stuff that we know for sure is going to be there that they basically just said. Anthem, obviously, the BioWare game, if that game ever comes out.
I think they're gonna pull an Andromeda, and it's gonna come out whether it's ready to or not. That's what's gonna happen to Anthem, Sean.
Yeah, I think they originally were saying that they wanted that out, like, late 2018 or something last year. That's not happening.
No, but they've said now they want it end of fiscal year 2018, so it's literally in the exact same spot as Mass Effect Andromeda, where they're telling BioWare, like, March 2019 or bust. And, I mean, Anthem will be interesting, because I think either Anthem works or BioWare is done as a company. Like,
yeah.
I think Andromeda was a big enough thing, or they're at least done with EA if this doesn't work, you know, and I think...
And EA has a long history of, like, when they are done with a developer, they do not, like, let that developer go, they kill that developer.
Yeah.
Which we saw last year.
Yeah, I mean, overall, the EA relationship has not been healthy for BioWare. There are a lot of ways you can back that claim up, you know, just read the stories. But yeah, this is interesting. Anthem really is, and there have been reporting on this that BioWare internally views this as a make it or break it moment.
Yeah, I mean, they've basically said publicly that all hands are on deck for Anthem, that the team that was working on Dragon Age
4,
I guess is what it would be at, are basically all working on Anthem, and that game is in a stalled production state. I look forward to finding out just how thoroughly Frostbite the engine fucked up Anthem right when that game comes out, because you know that Jason Schreier is like sharpening his tools, is like, I got another one, guys.
Yeah.
Here we go. Like, fucking Frostbite.
He's got just a set of vocab queued up on his, like, clipboard to just cut and paste in what Frostbite has done.
Yeah, because every single time one of these fucking BioWare games is coming out, it's Frostbite fucks it somehow. But yeah, EA, like, overall, their press conference, I'm very curious to see, because Anthem is, like, the one game that they have to hang their hat on that is not Battlefield 5/V, because they decided we'll go with Roman numerals this time. Last game was Battlefield 1. Battlefield 5 is set during World War II. This is a game that was also leaked early.
So this should have been called Battlefield 2.
Yes, even despite the fact that there is no game called Battlefield 2, or there is a game called Battlefield 2. There was no game that was just called Battlefield pre-Battlefield 1. That's the only thing they can use to justify that title, is that the first Battlefield game was called Battlefield 1942. So it's like, you kind of get that one. It's like, you're not Microsoft bad, but you're almost there.
Yes.
But yeah, so Battlefield 5V, whatever, is going to be there, and, you know, they'll show some fucking... Presumably that will be the end of the show, will be a big live stream where they have Snoop Dogg getting high playing fucking Battlefield, like they did with Battlefield 1 in Battlefront 2. Obviously, the EA will do their big sports title rundown. If you're someone who really likes FIFA games, you probably really don't watch E3, because if you did, this would be the only part of E3 you'd watch. Because my impression is that people who buy sports games kind of only buy sports games, so that's kind of it. But we'll find out about FIFA. We'll find out about Madden. We'll find out about NBA Live, or whatever the fuck they call their basketball game that nobody buys. That will be here, and I will have to suffer through 30 minutes of people talking about fucking soccer on stage. Then that's actually, I think, all the stuff that we have basically confirmed, and that seems like that's definitely going to be there. So from here on out is just a lot of speculation. For the past couple of years, they have had a kind of pseudo indie game under their EA Originals brand. This year, it was that Get Out game that got a pretty lukewarm reception.
A Way Out. Get Out is the Jordan Peele.
That's right. A Way Out.
Yes.
I feel like everybody. It's like it's very hard to keep those two fucking titles straight.
Yeah.
But there have been rumors for a long time that the studio that made that Unravel game featuring Yarny, like 2D indie platformer that I don't think anybody really liked much other than Yarny was kind of cute, that team said that they were working on an Unravel 2 like 2 years ago, have not heard anything else from that game. So if that game still exists and they're making Unravel 2 Yarny's Revenge, it will be on this stage. It's got to be, or like yeah. That game's not happening. Other than that, like, there has to be some sort of, like, you know, pitch to the, like, indie crowd. Like, we gave this, like, one creative visionary a bunch of money and hope that, like, 3 months later he doesn't embarrass himself at the Video Game Awards and go, like, fuck the Oscars, man! Video games is what it's at! Which is what the fucking Way Out dude did.
Yes. I think that segment where they do the indie game thing should be, like, a live stream, like, Skype thing, where the camera is trained on a couch in the EA offices, and they have the developer going through the couch looking for spare change.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's the spare change segment. If there are coins in the couch, they can use them to make their little indie game, and that's EA.
Yeah, that's basically what that section has always felt like. But they'll definitely try out some sort of, like, inspirational
yes.
male developer. It'll definitely be a male designer, and put them out on stage and make a little speech about, like, their passion
yes.
project. Next up, Star Wars.
What do they do with Star Wars?
Yes. Do they just publicly come out and just apologize to Disney in a, like, desperate hope to retain the license to Star Wars?
They bring out Bob Iger on, like, a big throne, and the head of EA gets down and shines his shoes.
Yes, Andrew Wilson, CEO of EA, who looks like a fucking supervillain. Yeah, I hope that happens. Like, the one thing we do know is that that team led by Stig Asmussen, who was the game director on God of War 3, that is now at Respawn, that they are working on a Star Wars game. That the last I think we saw and heard of that was like in 2016 when they did their weird, we don't have any video games to show, guys, so we have behind the scenes footage of somebody shooting a like part of an animatic for Mass Effect Andromeda on this computer, and then here's like Stig Asmussen like standing in a mocap studio, and that's the only thing we have to show for you. The Criterion is still a developer we own, but they don't make video games anymore. And that whole E3, that's the last time I believe we ever heard about that game. So.
Yes. Didn't Criterion have a game that E3 that was like clearly in like pre-alpha stage?
Oh yeah, with like temp textures and stuff.
Yeah.
That was like, we were the studio that used to make Burnout, the like racing, arcadey racing games that everybody loves, and then EA gutted our studio, and so what if we made another racing game, and we've never heard about that.
Yeah, do you think that game is just done?
Oh, that game's definitely done. Like,
yeah.
I don't understand. I mean, the only reason why they showed that in that state at all was because they had nothing to show that E3. So that was a really desperate play. Because
if we remember, so for Star Wars, the state of Star Wars is rough at EA. There was the very public Battlefront 2 implosion.
Yes.
Which was so bad. Again, the joke about Bob Iger is Bob Iger got on the phone and yelled at the head of EA. Like, that's
uh-huh.
a detail from that story. Because, you know, Disney is protective of their brand. Not protective enough to figure out that you shouldn't release your Star Wars movie like 2 weeks
yeah.
after Avengers, but whatever.
Maybe that's actually what EA does, is they get like very petty about it. It's like, see, we're not the only people that are fucking up Star Wars. It's like sitting on your fucking in your ivory tower. It's like, we didn't make fucking Solo. Like, we didn't bomb a fucking movie, assholes.
Yeah. No, but then there was also the cancellation of the game that Amy Hennig was working on.
Yes, and the shutting down of that studio, Visceral.
Yes. Yeah, Visceral's gone. Respawn is now apparently making a Star Wars game, so we can look forward to Respawn's closure soon. Is Titanfall 3 this year, do you think?
That's one I have here with a question mark. Titanfall 3 question mark.
Yeah.
EA now owns Respawn. That was something that happened last year.
Poor Respawn. All the signs point to no on them.
Yeah, so, like, I have to assume a Titanfall 3 is in development, even though Titanfall 2 did not actually, like, sell that well.
Yeah.
But people People have, like, a weird amount of critical regard for the single-player campaign in that game that I think is a bit much. Like, I thought that campaign was good and had that one really good time travel level, but people fucking go crazy for that campaign.
Yeah, so. I have never touched Titanfall 2, which is weird because Titanfall... I love Titanfall 1.
Yes,
I love that game. It was on my top 10 the year it came out. Great, great game. So I would play more Titanfall. I think I missed 2 because why everyone else missed 2 came out the week of every other game in the world.
And it also had that really bad beta.
Yeah, that beta was awful, yeah. So I'm curious. I still feel like Titanfall is a brand worth trying to make happen because it's got so much potential. It just, you know, it launched split 360 Xbox One. Xbox One didn't do so hot. Then it came to the PS4, but they put it out in the worst week possible. So, like, I think if you got it out in the right time period with the right marketing push, with the right, you know, game behind it, I think Titanfall could be big, but we will definitely see. Does this year feel too soon, though, to do any Titanfall stuff?
Because Titanfall 2 was 2016, so...
Because they're not showing it unless it's this year, I would feel like, right?
Probably. But again, like, EA is in this weird camp like they were in 2016 or 2015, whatever that one was, where they have, like, nothing to show. That's, like, making this outline. That's what it felt like, is they have Battlefield, they have Anthem, and they kind of have nothing else specifically to show. So, in the past, EA, in that situation, has proven themselves to be like, well, we'll show something, even if we don't have anything else to show. So I would bet that we get at least a teaser of a Titanfall 3, because again, we know that game has got to be in development. Another thing,
I'm going to plant my flag on the ground with a prediction.
Okay,
Titanfall 3, it's announced and it's coming out the same day as Red Dead Redemption 2, just to prove they haven't learned any lessons. That's what they're going to do. They're going to send it out to die.
Yes, it's go to fucking finally. We're going to take down Rockstar. Nobody else has had the guts to do it. I know that GTA 5 has sold like 100 million copies or something insane, but Titanfall 3, that's the franchise that will finally topple.
Yes.
That Rockstar.
Look, money. Guys, there's a non-zero chance that happens. Honest.
I mean, it was their strategy around Titanfall 2 was one of the stupidest things I've seen in terms of a AAA company releasing a video game.
Yes.
Like, what are you doing? Why are you releasing this right next to all these other games? You're crazy. Like, right next to your own video game. Battlefield. Another thing, like, going back to the Star Wars thing really quick. One thing that I thought was very funny when I was looking over my E3 2017 notes was I had a part here where I write, oh, John Boyega is in a video. Right, he's British. Finn is going to be in the first free DLC stuff. John Boyega is really cool. The DLC is free. Can't wait to see what the microtransactions are like. So I fucking called that one at last year's E3 because holy shit. Do you think that they publicly say anything on the conference about like moving away from a loot box strategy? Do they just like take that pill and be like, we've heard what you had to say and we've really listened to your complaints and we're moving? Because that's kind of what they did with Battlefront 2 when they premiered that game last year, was them saying like, they had a whole video that was like, oh, we heard what you said about wanting a single-player campaign, and guess what? We've got it. And that worked out great for them.
If Battlefront 2 is part of the show, as in they have new stuff, like they're going to pitch a DLC, then yes, I think they do that. But it might not be part of the show.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes, like, I can see that, yeah.
Like, I don't think they're going to bring it up out of the blue. Like, I don't think there's going to be a heart-to-heart, like, for those still playing. It will be in the context of if they are pitching a new big DLC. But I don't know if they're even doing that. That game feels like they've kind of cut their losses on that one.
Yeah, I mean, they really did. Like, by literally cutting out the loot boxes from the game.
Yes.
Next up, PopCap Studios. EA owns them. They haven't released a game since 2016. They did the Plants vs. Zombies stuff.
Did they do Peggle?
Yes.
I love Peggle. Yes. That's all I want to say. I want Peggle 3. Peggle's great.
I mean, that was one of the more memorable moments, I think, that since we've done these E3 podcasts, was whenever they came out and announced Peggle 2, of the guy just standing on stage and saying, Peggle 2! And pumping his fist in the air, and they had a bunch of like pyrotechnics go off.
Yeah.
That was a good moment. That's maybe the most excited I've ever been watching an EA press conference since we started this podcast, because they have been really bad for the last couple of years.
I love Peggle. It's a great puzzle game, and it's also one of the only games that sounds like a very glib way to describe a sex act.
Okay, moving on. Do you think they say anything about Need for Speed, Jonathan?
No.
Yeah.
When was the last one?
Need for Speed 2015? Was that the last one? I think that was the last one.
There must Well, if it's been that long,
No. That because that was one that they just called Need for Speed. No, last year Need for Speed Payback came out. That's right.
Yeah, so, I don't think so. I think Need for Speed is a dead franchise walking.
Yeah, obviously since I was on the Wikipedia page and I saw Need for Speed Payback and I thought that was a mobile game or something.
Yes.
I thought the last one was the one that was just called Need for Speed. Nope.
Unless they're planning like a big forceful reboot or something. But I think all those dreams died with the Aaron Paul movie. So
that was like in 2013 or something. Yes. That was a long time ago that they made that Aaron Paul fucking Hail Mary.
Yeah.
I mean, they have that Ghost Game studio, but yeah, even if they are still making Need for Speed, which I think is an open question at this point, they would not show it this year if the last one came out last year. Burnout. So Burnout Paradise Remastered came out this year. It's really fucking good because Burnout Paradise is really good. Burnout was really good. They basically gutted Criterion, but Criterion still technically exists even if the people that made it Criterion are not there anymore. Do you think that they say anything about Burnout, Jonathan?
I think they announce a remaster collection of Criterion's best games, and they call it the Criterion Collection, and they don't
and then
realize...
they get sued.
Yeah, and then they get sued. I think that's they do that at noon, and by 2 o'clock they've been sued.
And then EA just closes its doors and shuts it down out of, like, embarrassment as much as, like, the financial situation. Like,
yes.
Fuck it. We're done. We fucked this up so bad, guys.
I don't think there's any more Burnout.
I
think there's a possibility that at some point they could try to relaunch that series, especially if the remaster did well this year. I don't know the numbers on it. It was certainly very well received, but it just doesn't feel like the kind of thing EA makes anymore. So I don't think so.
Yeah. And that's all I have, because I was really, like, fucking stressing my brain out trying to come up with anything else that EA might possibly show.
Who does Splinter Cell?
Ubisoft.
Okay, so that's a different show. Yeah. You can see why I get that mixed up, but yes.
Yes. Yeah. So, EA, do you have any other thoughts on EA other than I hope they don't keep on fucking it up? Because they had a hell of a year in 2017. They had, like, a catastrophically bad year for a video game company.
I mean, EA has such poor public perception. They're ranked on, like, consumer polls worse than, like, Wells Fargo or something.
Yes, and that's been happening since, like, 2012, because if you make video game people angry, they get very angry on the internet.
They do, and it's stupid. EA is not as bad as Wells Fargo or something.
No, not even in, like, the same sphere of bad company.
But it does say a lot about, I think, their public perception.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, they could also just come out, the dude, Anthony, what's his name?
Andrew Wilson.
Andrew Wilson, he could come out, he could have grown a really big Snidely Whiplash mustache, he could be twirling it, and just carrying a bag of money labeled microtransaction money, and he could just stand there and laugh at everyone for a few hours as, like, clips of their new shitty games show on screen, and then they show a, like, team of BioWare employees shackled in the basement, coding furiously.
Yeah, for Anthem.
Yeah, and
he just opens up that briefcase and starts eating dollar bills.
Yes. Like, yeah. I think that's also non-zero chance of that.
It's true.
But let's move on.
Yes, let's move on from EA. Let's, you know, as we all must.
I think as a culture, let's move on from EA.
Yeah, it's bad. Especially, like, once that the whole... I get that, like, the visceral Star Wars game was really troubled. But once all that shit went down and that studio got shuttered, it's like, oh, fuck off. I'm so done. I'm so done with what they've done with Star Wars and everything. Which is the only thing they have going for them for me at this point. Because they also killed Mass Effect. Microsoft. The show I am most excited to see, because I just have no idea. So this is the one that by far has the most question marks on mine of, I guess, they don't have a lot lined up.
Is it just one giant question mark, or do you have, bullet points?
I had to make some bullet points. So, number one bullet point, Crackdown 3. It has to be here, right?
It has to be the centerpiece, or I don't know what is.
No, I don't think they have any other announced games.
No, they have none.
They have, like, some small, very small things. But in terms of their first party, obviously we know that Forza's happening. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But that's not technically announced. Crackdown 3 is their only, like, major announced game.
Yes. And it's been announced since the launch of the Xbox One.
Yeah, I think it was at least 2014, which was an interesting E3 for them, because that was when they showed Scalebound, which is a game that no longer exists. That's when they showed Crackdown 3, which went MIA for, like, 3 years. And that's also when they showed... what was that, like, that fucking card game from the original Xbox era that they were making a sequel to studio got shuttered by Microsoft. And then there was that Fable game that they were making.
Oh, right.
And then Lionhead Studios got shut down. So, Microsoft has, like, kind of like with EA, has a lot of, like, bodies in the cemetery at this point.
Yes.
And one of those might be Crackdown 3 in the studio making Crackdown 3, which I don't even remember what their name is.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this. I also think there's a non-zero chance that Crackdown 3 is dead.
Yeah, because it got delayed. Yeah. Like, it's... What the fuck is happening with that game?
I think that game almost certainly got stripped down to nothing and had to be rebuilt.
Probably,
because, like, also, like, they've shown something about it, like, every E3 for years. But last year, it was just a cinematic trailer with Terry Crews. There was no gameplay. And they were saying it's coming in November. It's like, there's no gameplay.
Yeah, like,
you don't have a game.
This is the point where, like, you're supposed to have the, like, a bunch of people standing on stage with fucking controllers and being like, and showing off, like, we're, like, because the big thing they're saying is, like, there's going to be a whole multiplayer side to this that's more than just, like, a little co-op thing. That was your E3 to, like, put that all on stage and have people, like, either fake play the game or actually play a live demo the way that, like, you know, like Sony will do with an Uncharted or something like that when those games are about to come out.
I mean, here's the big picture question for me, Sean. So if, let's assume Crackdown 3 happens, it's got to be the centerpiece.
It has to come out this year also,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. If it gets, I mean, I, again, we're at the point where we're speculating about the next generation, and this game was announced at the start of this generation.
Yeah,
so
right.
Yes, it very much does have to come out this year. But here's the thing, if that's their big game for the show, is Crackdown 3, a sequel to a series most people don't know exists.
Yeah,
let's be honest.
And people only liked the first one, and people only, like myself, bought the first one, because that's how you got into the Halo 3 beta.
Yes.
Like, Crackdown 1 is a great game from, like, fucking 2007 or whatever, but it's a relatively obscure title that they came up with a very smart strategy to boost its sales, and because it was a strong enough game to get word of mouth from that, and then they fucked it all up with Crackdown 2, which is terrible, and then, yeah, so it's not a marquee franchise. It's not Halo.
I mean, you know, we've talked about Microsoft a lot on this show and how utterly mismanaged the game side of their brand has been this generation. Like, disastrously so. Like, I don't think there's any precedent for this. Like, you can look at failed consoles. But the Sega Dreamcast, for instance, big failed console, tremendous lineup of games.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, classics, like, one of the most important systems ever, honestly, for the games that came out on it. You know, so there have been failures, but usually they have games on them. Even the fucking Virtual Boy got, their Wario Land game on it or something,
right, yeah.
You know? It only had 14 games total. And Microsoft, part of that is Microsoft has developed no new IPs for this generation. They've relied exclusively on IPs that generally originated either in the original Xbox era or early 360, like Crackdown. And, you know, those IPs have just, I think, been shedding followers. They've been getting worse. Halo 5 was bad. Gears of War 4 was bad. You know, I think Forza has been a bright spot, but that's also not something that, you know, sells consoles necessarily.
Yeah, it's such a known quantity that
yes.
It doesn't move anything. It's like the people who like Forza yeah. and have liked Forza since, like, the mid-2000s.
Yeah, so, I don't think there's any way to look at the Xbox stuff and say they're not basically in crisis on the game side of things.
Yeah.
And that's why this E3 is interesting, is either they find a way to build that back up and convince us, no, we do have a lineup of games worth buying this thing for, or, you know, my belief for a while has been, I think this is the last generation for Xbox, and I mm-hmm. think that's still very possible.
Yeah, it's definitely possible, because one of the main, like, things that has happened, as I kind of was talking about with, like, a lot of those games they were making around 2014, that then those studios got shut down, is that Microsoft has closed a lot of studios, but has not acquired a lot of studios, and so...
Yeah.
The little bit of exclusive stuff that they do have is either old first-party studios that they, like, kind of... Actually, that they cobbled together after the deals they made with Bungie and Epic went away. And so they made 343 Industries to make Halo games. They made The Coalition, I think, to make Gears of War. And then they have their Forza stuff. But then all their other stuff, all the other studios that they had, like, exclusive partnerships with, like Lionhead, are gone. And so that's one thing that makes it hard to make this, like, speculation list, is that they don't have the thing that Sony has or Nintendo has, like, all these properties, and then, like, a lot of studios that are basically just called, like, the Nintendo Studio, blah, 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 right? But, and then Sony has this, like, big list of, like, premier interesting developers from, like, Sony Santa Monica that just made God of War to, obviously, Naughty Dog, and they've got just such a rich group of developers that make so many different games that it makes interesting to speculate with Microsoft. Other than Crackdown 3, I have Forza Horizon 4 that's definitely coming out. I don't know if there's anything else to say about that.
I'm excited. That'll be the reason I dust off my Xbox this year. Forza Horizon 3 is the best exclusive on that system by a wide berth. It is a truly great game.
Nearly by definition.
Nearly by definition, yes.
Yeah. Also, maybe Forza Horizon 5 might come out based on that Walmart leak. I'm really excited for that one.
In joke for all y'all.
Yes. Gears of War 5 that was part of the Walmart leak as well. It feels early to do another Gears of War game, but...
Desperate times call for desperate measures,
yeah,
Sean.
Yeah, I mean, if you can shit out a sequel to Gears of War, they've been doing it for a while, so...
Yeah, Gears of War is an easy one to shit a sequel out for.
Yeah, so...
It's not going to sell great, but it'll get some people stuck in their parents' basement excited.
So I'm expecting there to be something about Gears of War 5.
Yes.
At the show. Well, I don't know if it's like a big demo or something, though when they premiered Gears of War 4, that went on for what felt like 10 fucking minutes.
Yes.
That was a while ago. Halo 6. It's Halo 6 at this show. I feel like we've had this conversation on and off.
No.
And we both kind of feel no.
I think it is possible we get a cinematic trailer a la the first look at Halo 3 in 2006.
Yeah, or they did that for Halo 5 as well with like the cloak or whatever in the desert. That's not anything that's in that game.
That's possible. I think there will be a Halo game this year. I think they're probably doing a Reach remaster. We've heard things about that.
Mm-hmm.
They have to get something Halo out because it's been 3 years and they want to keep the brand alive. Reach is a well-loved game. It's the only one that has not been brought over to the Xbox One as a remaster. So I think that is the game that we will see like demoed and shown off. That's cool. I love Halo Reach. But I don't think Halo 6 is ready for this year. In part because Halo 5 is just a game that clearly shows 343 had no goddamn idea what they were doing with that property.
Yeah.
So,
but like, what would be interesting about that is that new mainline Halo games have come out every 3 years since 2001.
Yes.
So 2001, 2004, 2007, 2010. And then actually, I think that's when it went short, right?
Because yes,
it
was 2012 is
for Halo 4. But then it went 3 again because 2015 was Halo 5. So 2018 should be Halo 6.
I'm just, look, in this environment, if Halo 6 was coming out this year, we'd have heard about it. There's just no way it's, and I, you know, maybe we're wrong. And that would be a big feather in Microsoft's cap because it is their most notable franchise.
It's such a stagnant franchise at this point. It's kind of like with Forza and Gears of War. Like, they're both stagnant. Neither of them are growing. They're not. I feel like you're not attracting anybody new, particularly if they do just call Halo 6 and don't just decide to abandon the number and go with the subtitle like they did the loose Halo 5 Guardians last time.
Halo Guardians 2.
Yes, Halo Guardians 2, because there are people that really like Halo 5. I think that, like, they're not us. I think there was, like, a certain, like, if you really liked Slayer and stuck with that game, there was something there for you, but it did not have the breadth of the Halo experience that either of us were looking for.
I mean, the biggest thing is that Halo is unique among first-person shooters in how story-driven it is as an ongoing franchise, and Halo 5 drove that story so far into the ground, it buried it 20 feet under and then poured concrete over the coffin. I don't think there's any coming back from it. Again, when I think of Halo 5, I just get depressed. It must be how like people who hate Star Wars The Last Jedi feel when they feel about that movie. That's the only thing applicable to that for me. I don't get angry.
Yeah, you don't scream at it at people online. But also people don't bring it up that much because it's mostly for
No, but it's just I think of like something I loved most of my life getting just killed as a property.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what Halo 5 is narratively. So we'll see. I think the smart thing to do with Halo would be to reboot it. And they could be doing that. It's not out the realm of possibility.
I mean, they would have to. They just sort of like say, "Yeah, fuck it." Because Halo 5, I don't remember exactly what the cliffhanger was. I just remember that there was a cliffhanger.
Cortana has gone evil and has taken over all the Halos.
Right. Yes.
And the Halos are back.
So they, if they do reboot it, they have to either just abandon that story or shit out like a comic book that finishes that story or something.
Because
it's kind of the modus operandi for this thing.
I mean, let's assume Halo 6 isn't this year and is next year. How weird will it feel going back to that particular story in the year 2019?
Yeah. Right.
At the end of this generation, trying to finish a trilogy that started on the previous generation.
Yeah.
It's going to... I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Sticking on the Halo thing for just a little bit longer, there has been reporting by which, like, they have officially announced that there is a game called Halo Fireteam Raven. I don't know if you've heard about this, Jonathan. Have you?
Do
you
know? No. What is that?
It is an arcade game exclusively for Dave & Buster's. Where it's a light gun game, basically, but when it's four players, it's set during the events of Halo 1, and you're like ODST people, I think, and you shoot stuff in Halo, and it's a light gun game for Dave & Buster's.
Do you think that's coming to Xbox or something? Or did you just put that on there for a fact? Okay.
I did not put it on the outline, but then we were talking about Halo. I remembered that I watched the trailer for it because I thought it was very funny that they were making this. And if there's anything that's going to depress you about the state of Halo, it's that they're making a fucking Dave Buster's game.
Yes.
It's like, I didn't even realize that Dave Buster still existed until I saw that headline.
Sean, another Halo question. Do you think we get either of, or both, Halo Spartan Assault 3 or Halo Wars 3?
Well, Halo Wars 2 is a video game that I think got sucked into a portal and nobody remembers until you just brought it up. Because, did that come out in, 2016? And I feel like it came out, like January or something of 2016.
That might have been last year, Sean. Yeah. Let me look this up. I think Halo Wars 2 is 2017. Yeah.
People just forgot that game existed the moment that it came out, which was, alarming.
Yeah, it was February 2017.
Fuck!
It's barely been a year.
Oh my god.
That game got ignored.
Yes, so that is one of the most just, lost AAA, quote-unquote AAA, but, first-party games for any system I've ever seen. It's like the brute force of this generation. It's just it came out, it's an Xbox game, somebody played it, somebody had to have played it, I don't know who. I liked Halo Wars 1 in that game. Nope. Moving on from Halo. Fable?
No.
There are rumors that Playground Games, that's the studio that makes the Forza Horizon games, are working on a Fable 4. That there have been rumors for that for a couple of years now.
That's possible, because that would be a very Microsoft move of, we have no franchises, so let's revive a dead franchise.
A dead franchise that, by the way, has two good games and then a really bad third game that nobody liked. I hated. I really like Fable 1 and 2, but Fable 3 is terrible. And then they made, a Kinect game and some fucking, Xbox Live arcade games.
Yes.
And killed the studio, Lionhead Studios, that made the Fable games. And so I think it's possible that they're just fucking dumping a Fable 4 in Playground Games' lap. I don't think that game would be good.
No.
I don't even know if that game would be good with Lionhead Studios. I certainly don't think it would be good without them. Because the Fable games are pretty distinctive in terms of their style and humor. Don't make a Fable 4. It'll just make me upset. No. That's a franchise I used to really like that they just destroyed. Next up, this is only kind of a point of order. The Metro Exodus game got premiered on Microsoft's stage last year. That game has been announced as having been delayed to 2019, because that was one of the games that was it's coming out 2018, and they put that year up on in big white letters on a black screen. You're like, that game's not coming out in 2018. That game's not coming out in 2018. It's not a Microsoft exclusive or anything, but it was one of the first things they showed at last year's show.
I think they should start the show with the exact same trailer, just rerun it and see if anyone notices.
And don't even delete the 8 and put in a 9. Just with Microsoft Paint or something, just paint over the bottom little quarter of the 8 to make it look kind of like a 9.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think that game will be there, but it is just something to bring up. Another kind of like that, because again, I'm desperate to find things to put in the Microsoft section. State of Decay 2 just came out. The people who like State of Decay seem to like State of Decay 2. So Microsoft does put out video games. They put
once,
out one.
Once in a while. There's been that and Sea of Thieves.
Yeah. This next one, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, is something I actually totally forgot that they announced last year until I was looking over my notes, which we'll go over my notes from last year's E3 at the end of the section, because there's some weird stuff in there. But yeah, they're making a sequel to Ori. I don't even think they gave a vague date when they showed the trailer last year. So they might show another trailer.
It's one of the more acclaimed games on the Xbox's generation. So
yeah. So it wouldn't be surprised to see a trailer. I certainly don't think it's coming out this year, but they have to show something. They will talk about Minecraft for too long at this year's show. That is the prediction I am more solid about than anything else on this list. They will talk about Minecraft for 15 fucking minutes and nobody will care.
Yeah.
Moving on. VR? ? I have VR ? On a number of different conferences.
Are we at the point where we can just say VR is dead again?
I think we're almost there. We're at the point where we can say that VR is on life support.
I just remind y'all, I was a hipster on thinking VR was dead when you all were excited about it, including my co-host here.
I was cautiously interested. I have not bought, paid any cent on anything VR related.
No, I know.
I've liked, I enjoyed watching YouTube videos of people playing VR, and like old video game people particularly playing VR, and being kind of like, oh, this is cool. And they haven't made videos like that for like 2 years.
So. I'm not convinced any consumer has ever bought a VR device, because I've only ever seen game critics who are sent the equipment for free using it.
Right.
So, yeah, VR is not a thing. Yeah. It's never going
it's
to be
not,
a thing.
I don't think it's
going it's to like be a Microsoft 3D stage. In movies. Fuck off, VR.
Yeah.
No.
ReCore 2.
I like ReCore. I do. It's a good game. I need to play
version. Yeah, ReCore the Definitive Edition?
No, but I would like to. I think ReCore is, I don't know if I would say underrated. Its problems are very real.
Uh-huh.
But I also like, it is just a kind of game that is so kind of rarely made. And I do think, like, if the Definitive Edition had come out in the original spot, like if that were the game that came out,
yes.
I bet that would have been on my top 10 that year. I like ReCore a lot. Like ReCore, yeah. Honestly, if I think of my memories of Xbox One, Forza Horizon 3, ReCore, couple of indie games, it's an interesting game. I don't think they're making a sequel to it, but I don't know what. Is that Armature Studios?
Yes, Armature Studios. So that's, I have that's ReCore 2 slash new Armature Studios game.
Maybe. I hope they're doing something. I mean, the Armature Studios people are one of the most talented teams in gaming. It's the Metroid Prime team. And ReCore, for all its faults, you can feel the talent.
Right, and like, its faults, I mean, I didn't play the game, but from what I understood, the faults were mostly a result of feeling like the game just got dumped out, right?
Yes, it's an unfinished game.
Yeah, so there's, yeah, there, that's probably not at all Armature Studios' fault, and
no.
Probably Microsoft's fault, so.
Yes.
Yes, I hope that they have something cool, because I remember the ReCore, like, announcement trailer being really exciting, because that's the only new thing that Microsoft has ever showed this generation, like, was yeah. Like, hey, ReCore, like, we're making that.
Honestly, if you have an Xbox One and wonder what you should play on it, I bet you can get the ReCore Definitive Edition for, like, $10, and it's now a finished game.
Right.
You'd probably love it. You'd be like, why did people hate this game? They didn't
they
necessarily...
They played a different version of that game.
They played a different game, yeah. So... Anyway, it's interesting. You know, Mega Man's having a resurgence this year. That ReCore was also made in conjunction with the Mega Man guy, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
And it's got a platforming identity to it that is really well done. So, yeah, we'll see.
Do you think they say anything about Sea of Thieves? Do you think that there's like a, here's our big content drop for the fall season for Sea of Thieves?
I would say yes. And I think I'm leaning yes.
I'm leaning yes as well.
I guess the only thing is, how many E3s in a row is that Sea of Thieves has been at?
Oh, God, like 3 or 4?
More than that, I think. Yeah. Probably 5 at this point. And it's just, I don't know. It's like, even when it's out, it won't leave the fucking E3 stage.
Well,
I don't know.
Just because Microsoft has no fucking first-party shit.
No.
So it's like, what else are you going to... At least that's supposed to be like a live game that like has active content updates. So... I think, I'm not thinking that there's going to be a huge section on Sea of Thieves, but I think we get, like, a trailer, a quick, like, 30 second to 1 minute trailer showing, like, here's them digging up a new treasure on a new island, and here's, like, a pirate boss that's not in the base game. That might be it.
What else?
This note just says, what third party show up? Is anybody else? Because that's basically almost all that they had last year was random third party games. And of the nature that we would never have been able to predict, because nobody cares about them.
Yeah, I don't... I feel like, you know, Microsoft's E3 is like a dinner party, and they've invited a lot of people, and some will come because they want a free meal, they want the potato salad, and they feel maybe some pity for the party host, but you're going to be able to tell who they are.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. Call of Duty is going to be at the Sony stage.
Yes,
so
Activision will be at Sony's for sure.
Square Enix sometimes does, but they don't have anything.
They have their own thing this year.
They have their own thing. Microsoft is first. I think Assassin's Creed Odyssey could be there.
That's what they did last year. Assassin's Creed Origins had like a short trailer on Microsoft's stage, and then had a longer demo on Ubisoft.
I think they will do that.
Yeah,
but I don't know what else.
Because that's also actually how Anthem worked out last time, was there was like a short teaser at the end of EA's press conference, and then Microsoft was next, and there was a big demo at the big one, that like the 6-minute video that people saw for Anthem. That was at Microsoft stage, which is a very weird move for EA.
Yes.
But, you know, so maybe EA might show something there also. If they have anything new, they might pull another Anthem.
I don't know. You're right. This is going to be fascinating. Do you have a section on there for like technical announcements?
No, but yes, we can say, like, new hardware stuff, software?
Because every year they've augmented this by... This is like a section that Sony is done with. They are never introducing a new feature to the PS4.
And even if they do, they're not going to talk about it at E3. No. Like, the nature of the press conference is going to be so far from that.
Yes. But Microsoft does, because that is one thing, is that the Xbox One has built up a lot of, like, really cool quality of life features in the meantime when they have no games to work on that, like, I hope, you know, Sony and other developers, like, pick up on, including all the backwards compatibility stuff.
Yeah.
But they've run
the
out of...
accessibility controller that they announced.
I think they're going to talk about that.
That'd be cool.
I think... But they're out of backwards compatibility. They already did the original Xbox, so they've run out of consoles. They've the Xbox One X is out and no one cares. So I don't know. I don't know if there's any hardware stuff they could have.
Yeah. I think it was something I considered putting on the outline, but I couldn't even come up with speculating like what would be another, like, because they've fully, like you said, run the course of the backwards compatibility thing. Like, they might go up on stage and say, hey, this game that's not on backwards compatibility yet is on the backwards compatibility, which I don't know what games are left that people would care about. Like, I feel like everything I've heard from, like, what is on the original Xbox backwards compatibility is, like, the library of good games on that console, and a lot of the bad ones also, like Blinks the Time Sweeper.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you want to play Blinks the Time Sweeper, you can do so right now on your, like, $500 Xbox One X.
Yes. No new games, but you can play that.
So
I don't know.
I have another section that
here's a question.
Oh, okay.
Sean?
Yeah?
Where does Red Dead come?
I don't think it's on the stage.
You don't think it is?
No. Okay. That was something I put at the very end of, like, an other question. It's just Red Dead Redemption 2. My answer to that question is I don't think it shows up.
Okay.
Because Rockstar usually doesn't, because they're, again, GTA 5 sold, like, 100 million copies or something. So
they don't
need to show up at E3. Like, they're bigger than E3, honestly. Yeah, so my next thing says, new IPs, question mark?
No.
Yeah, that was a quick one. Indie stuff, question mark? Yes. I think there's a lot of indie stuff. I think that's basically what the third-party thing is.
Yeah.
Actually, I guess this is the point where now I want to go over the games they showed at last year's E3, because this is a really interesting list when I went through my old notes. So you had Forza Motorsport 7, where they... I think... Which one did they do? I can't see where I describe it, but they did something where they spun a wall around to reveal the car,
right,
which I thought was bullshit. You should lower it on the stage or drive it onto the stage. If you just spin around a wall, I don't give a shit. Like, fuck off. That's the only thing I get excited about at Forza announcements is how do they get a car, a new, like, premier Porsche on the stage, and just spinning a wall around, bullshit. Don't give a fuck. Metro Exodus, which we talked about. Assassin's Creed Origins, so, you know, there's that. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Oh, right. They have that.
Yes, that is technically still an Xbox console launch exclusive, which was a phrase they used a lot last year's E3. They'll probably use this year's E3 as well. Deep Rock Galactic.
What the hell is that?
My notes here say Terrain Deformation FPS Minecrafty. Deep Rock Galactic.
It didn't come out yet, right?
It did come out. This is one of the ones that it has come out. I've never heard about this game since this E3, but you can play it. I don't know if it's in game preview or a full game or not, but you can play it on Xbox One, according to their, like online store.
All right.
State of Decay 2, that one came out. The Darwin Project.
Right.
This was where they had a random dude named Jethro Tull that was not the Jethro Tull that you're thinking of when you say Jethro Tull. And he was a shoutcaster who shoutcasted the game live as, like, a fake esports thing on the conference for, like, 3 minutes, which is such a bad look. And I think this game is out. Yes, it is available now, console launch exclusive on their web store. Buy now. How much? I'm going to click buy now and see if it says how much fucking money it is, because it doesn't say here. It is on the game preview program. Okay. So this game, it's $15 on the game preview program. I'm going to click on Deep Rock Galactic now that I know where you can see that. And is game Deep Rock Galactic is also in the game preview. So no, those games are not out. I apologize. You can pay money for a video game that is not finished, which is something I will never understand that people do. It's just something those kids do, I guess.
Yes.
No, it makes no sense. Then they talked about Minecraft for a long time. Minecraft in 4K. Dragon Ball FighterZ was on Microsoft stage. That was cool. Black Desert Online, which is that Korean MMO with the sexy ladies.
Okay.
That is not out on Xbox yet. The Last Night, which is the indie game that has a cool, like, pixel art thing that then people later found out that the guy making that game is a Gamer Gator. So fuck that. That game is also not out. The Artful Escape, which my notes say, stylish 2D platformer. That's the only thing I said about the game. Stylish 2D platformer called The Artful Escape. That game is not out. Code Vein, which is a, I say, Dark Souls-style action JRPG, which said they said it was coming out in 2018. That game is not out. Sea of Thieves, that did come out. Tacoma, that did come out, though we already knew that that was going to come out when they showed it. Super Lucky's Tale.
Oh, right.
Do you remember that? That game did come out last year.
Lucky Palmer, also a bad guy.
Yes, yes. Not technically a Gamergator, but might as well be. Cuphead, that game came out. Crackdown did not come out. Ashen, which is a cool-looking Dark Souls-y game, that did not come out. Life is Strange Before the Storm, the prequel, that did come out, but that's not like has nothing to do with Microsoft. Shadow of War, that came out, nobody gave a shit about that game, also has nothing to do with Microsoft. Ori and the Will of the Wisps, we talked about that. And then Anthem.
Nothing came out from last year's E3.
Almost nothing, and like about 70% of the games are just random Deep Rock Galactic, The Darwin Project, Black Desert Online, The Last Night, The Artful Escape, and Super Lucky's Tale, Ashen. Like, what are those games? It's just like Microsoft did that last year, where they just padded out their fucking Xbox One X stuff with 100 fucking just random games that nobody gave a shit about.
Yes, because that was the baffling thing, was that was the year they were showing off the Xbox One X, because it was launching, and they had nothing to show it off with other than Forza 7, which is admittedly a very good-looking game, but it's a racing game. They didn't have any, like, they didn't have Halo 6 to launch with it, which is what you would want. So, who knows? We should probably move on from Microsoft. Yes. But any other thoughts?
No, like, like you said, when we started talking about Microsoft, it might as well just be a giant question mark other than
dead console walking down the green mile.
Yes. With, like, the thing I'm most confident about is that you will talk about Minecraft and probably address Sea of Thieves in some way, maybe.
Yeah.
It's like, you got a weird conference ahead of you. Bethesda. This will be a quick one. They will talk about Rage 2, and nobody will care why. But that game was leaked from the Walmart thing, and then they just said, fuck it, we'll just put out the trailers now. So that'll be there. Fallout 76.
This was the announcement this week.
This just very recently leaked. It is still, I'm still kind of confused about what this game is. There's been, because they kind of released was a teaser about it. But then there have been some reporting, like from Jason Schreier, Kotaku, and several others, sort of feeling out like, their sources kind of tell us it's going to be a vaguely multiplayer online survival-y kind of thing, like a Rust or Daisy or whatever, like that genre that feels like it's the what people were into, the weird PC genre that people were into on like a frightening scale before that became the battle royale games with PUBG and now Fortnite.
Yes. So
it feels late to me to make a game like that with Fallout.
It also sounds like it could be cool. It could be good.
Like they experimented with that base building stuff in Fallout 4, which was interesting but incredibly clunky. So if they expand on that, that could be kind of cool. It's not a game I'm just not really in the mood for Fallout, because Fallout 4 was a good game that like kind of left me feeling with my like more than my fill on Fallout.
Because it was also pretty much Fallout 3 with
a
new skin on it.
Yeah, it had some better combat. It had really weird buildy stuff that was kind of fun because you could make like a dope basketball court.
Yes,
So Fallout 76. I'm really interested to see their pitch on it, because that's the one thing I'll say about Bethesda is that they are good at spending a decent amount of time on a game explaining what the game is.
Their shows are always good.
Yes, their shows are always really good, to the point like last year, and actually generally speaking, they have done this of only showing games that are going to come out this year.
Yeah.
So I'm fully expecting Fallout 76 is probably going to come out this year. I suspect Rage 2 might very well.
No, they've said Rage 2 is early next year.
Okay. So
they're
breaking
their own rule a little bit, but I think they're probably confident about when that game is coming out.
That's also, they put out so many games last year that it,
I don't know why you would want Rage 2 to come out anywhere near Red Dead.
Exactly. You know, it's like you can put that game out whenever.
It'll do better in February.
Yes. They will say something about Elder Scrolls Online, because they have every single year. They'll say something about Elder Scrolls Legends, which is the card game, because they do that every year.
Which they just pulled from its developer. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, I did not see
that.
Gave
it to a new developer, yeah. So
They will still show a trailer that makes you really excited about the game, because it looks fucking cool, and then you see what the... And this is like, it's just like a Hearthstone-y card game. It's like, there's no big epic fights with like magic dragons and bullshit. It's just you play a card. It's like, that's fine. I would rather watch Pride Kribo or something.
Yes.
Then that's all the stuff that I have like confirmed that we know is going to be there. Elder Scrolls 6?
No, not this year.
Yeah, I don't think this year either. There is a game that has been rumored for a while called Starfield, which is a rumored Bethesda Game Studios game, which is their, like, Fallout Elder Scrolls studio that makes their big main games. That's supposed to be some sort of space game. People, thought they were going to announce it last year and then pulled out some stuff that looked like, maybe they're kind of teasing that they'll talk about this. Because, again, I feel like this has been rumored since, 2013 or so. So that might be here.
It might be. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else?
Doom 2, Hell on Earth, question
mark? That's going to be my question. Do you think this is the year for Doom 2?
I want Doom 2, Hell... I'm just going to call it Doom 2, Hell on Earth, because they have to give it that subtitle, because it'd be so funny if it's just like they make it that difficult to Google this fucking video game. But yeah, Doom 2, Hell on Earth. I hope it comes out. I hope they are making that game. If it comes out this year, that'd be cool. I just want them to make it.
I think it's possible we get an announcement.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll come out this year, yeah. But...
I think the thing that makes me, think that it's not going... I hope that it's in development, but I don't think they're going to show it this year, even if it is in development, because of Rage 2.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to show two, hyper-violent first-person shooters.
Yeah.
If they don't need to. And just give Doom 2 its own space next year is how I feel that that'll probably work out.
Yes.
Next up, Arkane Studios Games. This is the studio that makes Dishonored and Prey, both games that Dishonored 2 and Prey did not sell well. So I don't know what that studio... Bethesda is a studio, or is like a publishing arm that does write by the studios under it. They don't do the EA thing of just we're going to kick you out to pasture.
Right.
But I also don't know what that means for the games that Arkane Studios is going to make, considering that Dishonored 2 and Prey are both sort of in that kind of same... simulation-y, first-person shooter exploration genre thing.
Right. Well, Bethesda's in a weird space. They don't make the kinds of games that generally, outside of a Fallout 4 or an Elder Scrolls 5 or something, that sell hyper well. They don't do microtransaction-y games. They don't do the games-as-service thing. They, no one else makes a Wolfenstein 2 kind of thing, where it's just a campaign and they put it out. But that also means they're kind of out of lockstep with the industry. So I'm curious about what those kind of moves could be.
Me too. I would be interested to see if Arkane Studios is there. They only have a tease, because again they put out two projects really recently, because they put out Dishonored 2 in 2016 and then Death of the Outsider, that big DLC expansion, last year. So I imagine that if they are working on something, it's still a bit off in the future. Next up, VR, question mark?
No.
They had a lot of VR stuff at last year's conference. They had Skyrim VR, they had Fallout 4 VR, they had Doom VFR or whatever.
Virtual fucking reality.
Yes. I also don't think it's there. From what I understand, I think people kind of like Skyrim VR. I think that came out recently on PlayStation VR or something, because I heard people talking about it more.
It's
recently.
Also super low res, mm-hmm. and it looks like the 360 game again. Yeah. But yeah. So, here's a question I have.
Okay.
They've been big Switch supporters.
That is my next thing, says Nintendo Switch ports, question mark.
Yes, because they've done Doom, they've done Skyrim,
yeah.
Wolfenstein 2 is about to come out. I bet there's another one they'd like to tee up for that. Do you think, I think Dishonored could be it. I think if they can do it, Fallout 4 would be a huge get.
Yeah, I would be skeptical of them being able to get that too, because that didn't even run well on the PS4 and Xbox One, right? So I'd be skeptical of them being able to get that to work on the Switch. Or if it did, I would be skeptical of it. I guess there's two... I mean that in two different ways of being skeptical for them to get it to work. One way is they don't get it to work and they don't release it. One way is they don't get it to work and they release it anyways.
They did Doom. That's a big one that they got working.
Yeah,
so.
But also Doom is a level-based first-person shooter. Yes. It's not a big open-world experience that tanks the frame rate on a good on a modern console and PC, you know?
So who knows? But I guess I'd lean towards a Dishonored or a Prey or something.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if they had a section here where they talk about a Nintendo Switch port stuff that is Dishonored 2 or Prey.
It's been
or even
big
for Dishonored 1, because that's not on that console.
It's been big for them. They've done well.
Yeah.
And I think Nintendo fans like having those. So.
Yeah, that might take up what their VR slot was last year. That's just here's a bunch of a quick shot of a bunch of little projects that we're doing that you know about that we don't need to spend time on. That might be that. And then my last one is Wolfenstein 3T's. I don't think so, but...
It's too early for that.
It's too early, but Wolfenstein 2 is really fucking good, and but it also didn't sell amazingly, so I just really hope that they're fucking finishing, because they said it's supposed to be a trilogy. I want to see how that story ends.
Wolfenstein 3, the next Colossus. I don't know.
The nexter Colossus.
Yes.
The newest of the Colossi.
So that's Bethesda.
That's Bethesda. I think it's probably going to be a pretty straightforward, quick presentation from them. Next up, Square Enix is doing this is like a video presentation thing.
This is going to be fun. This is going to be interesting.
Yes. So, and almost all the stuff I have on here is confirmed. Because, like, Square Enix only does this every once in a while. So I think the only reason they're doing it this year is because they have a lot teased up if you put together what they have already announced and what has been leaked. So, Just Cause 4 from the Walmart leak. Square Enix publishes those games. That will be there.
Yes.
Almost certainly. Like, is everything else from that Walmart leak has been true, so I'm just assuming that that's going to be there. The Final Fantasy VII Remake, they will talk about that or show a trailer or something. That game has been in development a long time, and I don't even really know what it is anymore.
Yeah.
But that will be there. Kingdom Hearts 3, that will be there. They will show a game demo thing. They've been showing that game off, like, frequently.
Yes.
Recently.
Do you think that game is this year?
I don't remember what I said on our bet thing we did.
I took that as my first seed draft. Okay. So,
I don't even remember if what we picked was what was supposed to come out this year or what was not. I have no memory of it.
The draft was games that we don't think will come out this
year. Okay. So then, yes, it is coming out this year, asshole.
Because I think they're going to date Kingdom Hearts 3 this time.
I think that's a good prediction. I don't know if they're going to hit that date.
No.
I think they will put a date on that thing.
Yes, I think it seems like it's close enough to at least they're going to give us the date and tell us what the fancy collector's edition is.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Yeah.
Yes, I think you just say the fancy collector's edition as if there's not going to be a dozen of those fucking things with, like, every combination of every re-release of every other Kingdom Hearts game that has ever come out, like Kingdom Hearts 1.5 plus 2.5, which is also Kingdom Hearts 4.
Yes.
Dragon Quest 11 for an American release.
We already knew that's coming.
Yes, yeah. So we know it's happening. Do you think they talk about it?
Oh, yeah. They talk about it. My hope is that they say, we listen to the fans, and we're sorry we upset you with this. We are going to put it out on 3DS over here. And if not...
That would be such a, like, niche-like thing to put into your, like, E3 press conference.
I'm not getting it on PS4. I want the 3DS version.
I don't blame you for feeling that way.
It's I just don't think they're going to say it.
I don't think they're going to address that issue on their E3 press conference. If they are reversing the decision, they might reveal it like in a press junket around their E3 press conference. I don't think that they're going to, like, specifically... Jonathan, I know you're very upset about the 3DS.
I'm just saying, they could do a big, like, showcase for it at the end and say, and due to fan demand, we will also be doing, and they have, like, I'm saying 10 seconds, we will also be doing the 3DS version.
You forget Square Enix is primarily a Japanese company, so they will never admit wrongdoing in any way. Dude, like, even if they do reverse that decision, they will not say it as if they have reversed the decision or recognize that they have listened to the fans in any way, because they're a Japanese company.
So maybe, surprise, it's also coming to 3DS.
No, they will say Dragon Quest XI releasing in America on Nintendo Switch, PS4, Xbox One, and 3DS on these days.
They're not doing the Switch version. That's still delayed.
Well, that will have, like, the Switch version will be, like, projected 2019 or whatever, right?
Yeah.
That will be how they say that.
Yeah, they're going to show it, though.
Yes. Dragon Quest Builders 2, which I have next to that, because so in parentheses, how I made my list was in parentheses is where the leak came from, and my leak for that is Walmart ?
But we know that game is happening.
We know that game is happening, but also the Walmart leak says Dragon Quest 2 on it, so I don't know if that's... We both assume that it's Dragon Quest Builders 2. Either that, or it's like someone didn't know how the number 11 works for Dragon Quest 11, or they are, I'm hoping, re-releasing Dragon Quest 2, which is the Final Fantasy 2 of Dragon Quest games. As someone who's played Dragon Quest 2 in Japanese, that's not a fucking game that you want to play. It's weird and bad, but kind of interesting from a historical perspective.
Yeah, I mean, Dragon Quest Builders is a phenomenal fucking game.
Yeah.
I do think 2 is probably later this year, and I think they're going to do a big showcase of it, because everyone likes it. It's a Minecraft style. Anyone can play it.
Yes, and I want to play it. So, and I hope...
Builders 1 is so good.
I hope they don't put it out this year. I hope they put it out in, like, January or February of next year so that I can play it, because if they put this thing out in, like, October or something, fuck you, I'm not going to have time to play this game.
Yeah.
Shadow of the Tomb Raider, which we know about.
Yes.
They will say that, because they will show a trailer.
Yes.
Because they make those games. Octopath Traveler, which releases July 13th.
Yes.
So, the only reason they wouldn't show that is because it releases so soon, but generally speaking, in that kind of situation, they will show, like, a launch trailer or something at their E3 press conference.
Yes, and I assume we'll also see a lot about that game at the Nintendo show, so it's just a matter of where we see what.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah. And then, the only one I have that is speculative is a new Yoko Taro project, like, which would be, like, a Nier Automata 2 or something akin to that. because the last time that Square Enix did an E3 press conference was when they announced Nier Automata, which I rewatched that a couple of like months ago because I was interested in like how would I have received this when this was announced? It's like it's a fucking gobbledygook if you've not played Nier and have no idea who Yogotaro is.
Isn't it a little too early for another Nier?
It's probably too early, but that game did so much better than a game like that should ever do. Like, it sold like 2 or 3 million copies, which that should be a sub 1 million game. Like, that's the first Yogotaro game that has ever broken a million sales.
Yeah.
So, I would not be surprised if, like, they tease something or do something like that, because I don't think that if he's making another game, if he's, like, helping develop another game right now, I don't think that a game that he makes is probably not going to take, like, 3 or 4 years. It's probably more like a 2 to 3 year development cycle. So,
we will see.
We will see. That's one I'm hoping for. I don't really think it'll be there, but that'd be cool.
Nier Automata.
Fuck you. Ubisoft.
Ubisoft.
Ubiquitous software. My first point is, will Aisha Tyler host this year, because she wasn't last year and it made me sad.
Is that actually Ubiquitous Software? Is that where that comes from?
That is where their name comes from. I don't think they... That's how I know that it's pronounced Ubisoft and not Ubisoft. And if you've ever said Ubisoft, you're wrong.
That is so Canadian. Ubiquitous Software.
It's a very presumptuous title for a fucking company, if you ask me. Like, you make some good video games, and I appreciate you, Ubisoft, but you're not fucking Ubiquitous. That's a bit much.
All right, anyway, I hope Aisha Tyler's there. Probably not, but I don't know.
Yeah, if she skipped a year, it would... Because she did skip a year last year. I hope that was for, like, she was doing something else, because I like her. And we missed something from her not being there, because she's done them, like, every single year we've done this podcast. Anyways, that's not a video game thing. Video game thing. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which was rumored, leaked, teased, and then officially announced.
Yes.
Within the span of, like, 3 days or something.
Yes.
I had to repeatedly change how I put that in context on this list over the course of 2 days, because it's like the information changed so much. So we know now they are, and it's been, I think what the one thing that's a little bit fuzzy is whether or not this is going to be this fall or early next year is not entirely clear, or who knows, it might get delayed. But what we do know is it is set sometime around the time period of Assassin's Creed Origins, but set in Greece. Hence the Odyssey thing, which is wrong because it should be like 800 years earlier if it wants to be anything contemporary with the Odyssey.
Also, not 1 year after Super Mario Odyssey can you go and call your game Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
But the Odyssey.
Yeah, but what do you think people are going to think of right now when they hear video game title Odyssey?
One of the greatest pieces of human storytelling in the history of our entire species, the Odyssey, is what
comes
to mind.
Yes, I know
Super
Mario Odyssey is one of the greatest pieces of storytelling. It's got the cool song and everything. This isn't going to have a cool song.
Does fucking Super Mario Odyssey have the Telemachia in it?
Yes.
Asshole. No, it doesn't.
It's an Easter egg. Mario reads the Telemachia to you in Greek.
It's really interesting that the opening, like, 5 hours of Super Mario Odyssey are actually Super Mario's son going on a journey trying to find out where his dad is, and then it cuts to Mario.
That's kind of what Mario 64 DS is, but with Yoshi. Because you have to start as Yoshi and find Mario.
That is the Telemachia of
the Yoshimachia
of Mario games.
Anyway, yeah, I think it's a bad title to pick that soon on the heels of Mario Odyssey, but whatever.
Yeah, I think it's a bad title to pick if you're setting this game sometime in, like, the very late, like, close to the year zero BCs. Like, if you're going to set it in ancient Greece.
But there's...
I saw some people saying it's set in ancient Greece. It's like, that's not ancient Greece. Like,
well,
it's like the way that people said ancient Egypt. It's like, it's not fucking ancient Egypt.
But there's been disagreement on whether or not it is a direct origin sequel in the same time period, or if it really is ancient Greece.
Yeah.
Like, reporters have heard different things. I'm guessing, because it sounds like the thing is that they want this to be a direct follow-up to Origins.
Yeah.
So it probably is the same time period.
Because, you know, the Egypt-Greece stuff is so close geographically, and then, like, there's so much crossover there.
And there's a bunch of Greece stuff in Origins. Yeah. I know you have.
Yeah, because, I mean, Ptolemy was descended from, like, the Greeks and Alexander the Great and stuff. Yeah.
Assassin's Creed Origins is really good. So, you know, if this is a direct sequel with more about... That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
They haven't done that since the Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy of, like, having the same, you know, playable... So there's rumors, like, maybe Bayek is the main character, or he's a character in the game or something. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with this.
Yeah. If this game does release this year, though, I would be concerned just from, like, a... Have they had enough time to make a... Like, because Assassin's Creed Origins is a big fucking game that is way bigger than any other Assassin's Creed game.
bigger than it probably needs to be.
Yes. So it's like, I'm just, if they're trying to make another game like that in that scale, because that's another part of the sort of reporting around the leak, is that it's going to have like even more RPG mechanics probably, and have a selectable character that you can play as a male character or a female character. I don't know if that means like customization or not, what they look like.
I liked Origins. I cannot play an annualized open world franchise. No. Like,
that's a bad strategy.
I do not have the energy to play another one of these fucking games this year. You know, the Persona games are like my favorites ever, but if you had Persona 6, you know, next week and it was another 100-hour game, I'd be a little bit like, okay, like, slow down, guys. That's a lot.
I'll play this because I have a blood pact on this podcast to play all these games. But if like, we fucking imported the fucking Japanese version of the rhythm games, we would play it. But it would be a lot.
That's all. It's too much.
Yeah. There will be a lot more. That's one of the things I'm most interested to get just more information on, that if they are planning that to come out this year. Have they been working on this game for like 3 or 4 years? Because it takes a long fucking time. Because that's one of the things we found out about Assassin's Creed Origins, is that that team was working on that game since Assassin's Creed 4.
Yes.
So it's like that game had a long development time. I don't think they would give Assassin's Creed Odyssey has like that space to have had that kind of development. Anyways, next up, Splinter Cell. This is from the Walmart leak, the infamous Walmart leak of 2018, where the video game companies are going to retaliate and try to destroy Canadian Walmart or something. Something's going to happen. But yeah, I have in my E3 2017 notes, if I can find it, I have like, no Splinter Cell, what the fuck, I think at the very bottom. Yeah, just no Splinter Cell. And that's the last thing I have to say about the Ubisoft E3 press conference in my note, is just no Splinter Cell, period. Very disappointed. I think I said that the year before, also in my 2016 notes, no Splinter Cell. I really like Splinter Cell Blacklist, which came out in 2013. They have not made another Splinter Cell game since then. I want them to make a new Splinter Cell game. It sounds like they are. I want to see what it is.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't even really know what Splinter Cell is.
It's like a stealth action game. It was originally like more hardcore stealth on like the Xbox One generation, and then they made Conviction in the 360.
The Xbox One generation.
Fuck. Fucking my Microsoft, you assholes. The Battlefield One generation. No, the original Xbox with like Splinter Cell Chaos Theory and all those. And then Splinter Cell Conviction was more action-y. The Splinter Cell Blacklist was kind of a mix. It's just like a good kind of stealth action sort of franchise, and those games are good, and they should make it. And I'm way more interested in a new Splinter Cell game than the other game that has been officially revealed, is Tom Clancy's The Division 2.
Why? Why on earth are they, this is the most baffling sequel announcement I've heard, is The Division 2. Why? Is it just that they spent too much money making The Division 1 and they want to get their money's worth out of it, so make a sequel using all the assets and everything? That's got to be it, right? Because there was no... It sold, but it didn't.
It did
burn down the world.
Make waves. It was just sort of... It especially like compared to the amount of like interest around its original reveal.
Yeah.
And the actual game felt like kind of a cold, wet fart in comparison. Because I played like the beta for The Division, and then I did not play The Division, and that will tell you more than enough. I think I went on like a big rant on this podcast about the like very, very suspect politics of Tom Clancy's The Division, that then when that game actually came out and heard what the full story is, exceedingly suspect politics. So I'm not interested in Tom Clancy's The Division 2. Next up, The Crew 2. This game is coming out June 29th this year, so...
Sure it is.
They will.
Who cares?
They will say something about The Crew, because that's like 2 weeks from when the show is, so...
Same thing, like, no one cared about The Crew, no one played The Crew. I assume it's just, we spent a lot of money making this big USA map, let's do it again.
Hey, Jonathan, you can fly airplanes and drive boats in this one, so...
Great.
Fuck you. Crew 2.
American game development is in such shambles. Like,
it's very confusing. It's a confusing state.
This is a topic we should do sometime of, like... this has been an interesting generation for games, because... There have been some bright spots in Western game development, mostly fueled by Sony, but overall, I think the Western game market has floundered in really amazing ways in the last 5-6 years, and this generation has largely, for me, been propped up by the resurgence of the Japanese game market, and I don't know where that's going to go in the future. It's a weird thing.
Yeah. And it's like one of the sort of hallmarks of this generation feels like the near death of the racing genre.
Yeah.
As evidenced by The Crew 2, which is like the only other racing game other than maybe Need for Speed that would be at the show other than Forza, which is at every single year.
Yeah.
This is like, fuck, man. Next up, Skull and Bones. This has been delayed to 2019/2020. This was the... That was... This was the pirate game, sort of spun off from the pirate mechanics from Assassin's Creed 4. That's not specifically Assassin's Creed game. It uses those like concepts that they showed off last year's E3 that also ended with like a big black text or big black screen with white text saying 2018. That game's not fucking coming out in 2018. They might show a trailer. I would not be surprised if this game skips the show entirely, considering how like deep that delay is.
Yeah, because if it's saying 2019, 2020, that's 2020.
Yeah, it's not going to be out of 2019. That's right. That's a good point, Jonathan. That's just, I put 2019/2020 out of respect for them saying that. But it's not going to be. No video game has ever, like, come under the deadline. It's like, oh, this game's just done. We'll just fucking put it out in 2019. That's amazing, guys.
Yeah, no.
That's never happened.
No.
Next up, Just Dance 2019. That will be at the show. There will be a baffling 5-minute sequence where people dance on stage, and then they'll say Just Dance 2019 is out like now or tomorrow or something, and is on every single device you could possibly own. You can play fucking Just Dance 2019 on your refrigerator if you want.
Yeah,
they do that every year. Those games must still sell really well. I don't know.
Or they're very cheap to make.
Or both.
Yes.
Yeah. Far Cry 5 DLC. I think there will be something about it, because they're selling like a season pass for that game. They've kind of talked about there will be DLC.
Didn't they like completely re-release Far Cry 3 in Far Cry 5? Is that what I read?
I think that's one of the... No, that's like they have made a remastered version of Far Cry 3 that was sold with one of like the collector's editions of Far Cry 5.
Okay. That came really under the radar. I didn't know they did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would just play Far Cry 4. Don't play Far Cry 3. Okay. Don't play Far Cry 5. Unless you want... Only play Far Cry 5 out of, like, an academic curiosity like I did.
I don't have that much academic curiosity. I learned that fast.
Yeah. It was a quick revelation for you.
No.
The academic curiosity thing gets way more interesting after the part where you bailed out. But I do not blame you for bailing out of that game. I think that there will be a, like, trailer something for some piece of Far Cry 5 DLC. Because Far Cry 5 is the best-selling game released this year so far. So...
Fucking Trump's America, man.
Yep, that's where we are. Starlink Battle for Atlas.
What?
This is a game that they premiered last year. I think it's supposed to come out this year. I don't know if they delayed it or not. It is a Toys to Life game, because that's still a genre that people are making, apparently, even though I think Activision is not going to have a Skylanders game or anything like that this year. But that's...
No.
Yeah, so Disney Starlink Battle for Atlas.
Yeah, weird. Okay.
Yeah, Disney Infinity is gone.
It's gone.
Lego's Dimension, I don't think they're making any new stuff for that.
That's done. Skylanders kind of isn't much of a thing anymore. Even Nintendo's way ramped down Amiibo stuff.
Yeah, and Amiibo isn't even quite what those are, because Amiibo's like cross games.
Yes.
These are all like in their own weird little things. But yeah, I love, hate these titles. Starlink Battle for Atlas. It's so fun to say. This is a game I had completely forgotten about until I looked at my notes from last year's E3.
Yeah.
I was like, oh fuck, right, they did that. It is also one of the games that we'll talk about more at Nintendo's thing. This is one of the games that was leaked to have a Switch. No, actually, it was always going to be on Switch, but it was leaked in the image with a bunch of Switch games, some of those being ports that were not announced yet, but it's going to come out on the Switch. So that indicates to me that they will talk about it at the show, which was, it was either they will talk about it at the show or this game is canceled. I think it's going to be both. I think they're going to talk about it at the show, and then they're going to cancel the game, because... You're going to lose so much money. You're going to lose so much money releasing a fucking Toys to Life game, because you have to manufacture all this bullshit and nobody's going to buy it. And it's going to be, maybe this is their strategy to fuck over Canadian Walmart. Just like dump a bunch of bullshit on themselves that like pushes out all this other merchandise, and the Canadian Walmart's like, I don't know what to do with this. Even Americans aren't buying this fucking bullshit game. You think Canadians are going to fork up even more money in Canadian dollars for Starlink Battle for Atlas?
I think Starlink Battle for Atlas will be announced as a Canada exclusive. And that's how they do it.
Yes.
American Walmarts don't even get it. They're spared.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how they're going to pitch this game, because it's such a just like fucking faceplant. It was a faceplant thing to do last year. It's more of a faceplant thing to talk about Toys to Life genre this year.
Yes.
Like you might as well talk about a VR thing, which transitions me to the next game, Transference, which was another game they talked about last year, which has Elijah Wood involved in some capacity, and it was a very confusing demo trailer. This is something they basically have kind of low-key said that we're going to talk about this at some way at E3. I suspect there will be another confusing Elijah Wood related trailer, and that is the only VR thing I'm actually confident about that will be at this show.
Is
this weird Elijah Wood thing called Transference. Next up is my more kind of speculative stuff. You think that there will be anything related to South Park, because there has been a South Park related thing on Ubisoft stage every year, I think, since 2013.
God, I hope not. I want South Park to die. I want it to die so bad. If I were Thanos and I had the Infinity Gauntlet and I could snap my fingers and make things go away, one of them would be South Park. I'd probably get rid of like Trump first, but then South Park. Just go away, South Park, but you're probably right.
Yeah, I think they, for whatever reason, they have held on to that. They've released some mobile game, I think, last year alongside the
Fractured Butthole.
Yeah, which had just recently came out on the Switch.
In a completely broken state.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that. Yeah.
Yes, a fractured butthole.
Yes.
So I think there will be some, just because for whatever reason Ubisoft seems really fixated on it, I think South Park will be there in some capacity. I don't know what. Update on Beyond Good and Evil 2, question mark. Are they still making that video game? Will that game ever come out?
Was that
will
last year when they did
that? That was the thing they dropped at the end that was like the big cinematic trailer that then they came out on stage and talked about, like, we're making that sequel to Beyond Good and Evil, a game from the original Xbox generation that then had a, like, trailer for a sequel early in the 360 generation, that then nothing more manifested from that until last year, where they're like, all of a sudden we're making a sequel to that game that looks nothing like Beyond Good and Evil, which was like a Zelda-esque, like, exploration kind of game, and that this looks like a, you're like No Man's Sky kind of pitch of, they're gonna go to other planets and they're gonna be whole planets and blood. It's like, what the fuck game are you making?
I think that game is, that looked like a pitch for a game, not a game in active development.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's gonna be more on that now.
No, me neither. Other Tom Clancy properties, question mark. Ghost Recon, Rainbow Six, other new, something new Tom Clancy's Tom Clancy.
Jack Ryan game to tie in with the John Krasinski TV series for Amazon. Have you heard about that?
No. Didn't they just make a Jack Ryan movie with the fucking Kirk dude like two
years
ago?
Yes, it was like 5 years ago. It's been a while.
Has it
really
been that long? Yes, it's been a long time.
It's been a long time. And yes, they're doing a Jack Ryan television series with John Krasinski from The Office, who I love, but do not view really as Jack Ryan. But whatever.
No. Yeah. I'm not going to try to look for that movie on Chris Pine's Wikipedia. That's pointless.
It was called Jack Ryan Shadow Operative.
Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit from 2014. So you're closer. It was directed by Kenneth Branagh.
It was, and he also plays the villain. Yeah.
Why?
And it had for some reason they got Keira Knightley as the girlfriend years after she had stopped doing that kind of role. It was a very weird film.
Yeah. Kenneth Branagh has had a weird ladder. Career.
Because the next year he made Cinderella.
Yeah.
We're getting off topic.
And then Murder on the Orient Express. Do you think Kenneth Branagh will be here? Do you think he's making his Assassin's Creed 2?
Maybe he's...
Electric Boogaloo?
Maybe he's making a Hercule Poirot video game for Ubisoft.
Ubisoft. Ubiquitous Software.
They're ubiquitous. They're so ubiquitous, they're going to do an Agatha Christie game.
Yes. I want Kenneth Branagh on the Ubisoft stage. I don't know how you get him there. Maybe if Aisha Tyler's not coming back, they get Kenneth Branagh.
At one point, EA had the license for Harry Potter. I don't know if they do anymore. I think that's reverted to WB. But they could do a Gilderoy Lockhart spinoff game. That's what Kenneth Branagh played in Harry Potter.
I'll take your word for that.
Yeah.
We are really off topic. Moving on. Nintendo stuff. So last year they had Mario's versus Rabbids.
Yes.
The Kingdom Battle or whatever. Do you think they have a sequel to that? Do you think they talk about Switch ports? What do you think's going on?
They're definitely going to do something with Nintendo. Because this time, their love affair with Nintendo has paid off.
Yes.
Unlike it did on the Wii U.
we're going to put out Rayman Legends on the Switch. Fuck
there's,
you guys.
There's that big DLC coming out for Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle,
the Donkey Kong one. The Donkey Kong game.
And they showed that off a little bit on the Nintendo YouTube channel recently. And it's a big thing. It's a whole new island. It's like a new campaign. So it looks very cool. That feels like something Nintendo's going to show off, not Ubisoft.
Yeah, I don't think Ubisoft would show DLC for that game on their stage.
But I think they do something with Nintendo. I mean...
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I just don't know what in all the lineup of stuff you're talking about would be the Nintendo thing this year. But maybe it's something new. Like, they also could be in the business of just making different games for Nintendo because they know that'll do well. So maybe there's a different property they'll do something with. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm almost positive that there'll be some Nintendo-related thing, whether it's a new game or ports of old games.
Ubisoft is like that friend who's been there for Nintendo through thick and thin. Yeah. Ubisoft has been there for Nintendo through thick and thin, and now, like, Nintendo has gotten their act back together, they're out of rehab, they're doing great, and the friend wants to be there with them, I think.
I think, like, it's a different situation of that Ubisoft is the, like, addict that just, like, crashes on everybody's couch and, like, somebody puts out a piece of hardware.
That's true.
Ubisoft is like, I'll fucking make games for that, man. Like,
yeah.
I think Ubisoft was like one drink away from putting out games on like the Ouya or something. You know, yes. They're so desperate to just throw shit out on new consoles. You know, they made that fucking zombie game on Wii U. They just go. They just go for new platforms. Like, the only thing that surprised me was that Mario vs. Rabbids Kingdom Battle wasn't a fucking launch game. That it took them a little bit to put that thing out. But yeah, so I think Nintendo will be there, or the Ubisoft-Nintendo partnership will be there in some capacity. Maybe the Rabbids will be in Super Smash Brothers. Maybe they say that or something.
Oh boy, that would be wild.
That's going to happen. Now that I've said that, I had not had that thought until I just vocalized
it. You're probably right.
That is 100% fucking happening. Like, there's going to be a whole, like, it'll be like Pokemon Trainer or something. There'll be a whole team of, like, Mario Rabbid and Peach Rabbid and Luigi Rabbid, and they'll,
Honestly, they'd probably make it really good. Like, that's the weird thing.
Because I'm not saying it'll be bad. Yeah. I think it's happening.
Yeah, no, that's happening, definitely. Okay. Yes.
That might be on Ubisoft, or it'll be at Nintendo. Watch Dogs, ? Watch Dogs 3, ? I should have put there. Or maybe just Watch Dogs the movie, who knows?
Oh god, Watch Dogs the movie. They're still trying to do that, right?
I think so. I mean, every fucking big game is trying to be a movie some way.
It's so stupid. Yeah. Watch Dogs is like the most pathetic franchise of this generation. They tried so hard to make it happen, it didn't happen. But they're probably going to do Watch Dogs 3 anyway.
Yeah.
So who knows?
There is an Engadget article from June 2016 saying the headline is Ubisoft is still making a Watch Dogs movie. That's a long time.
That's never happening.
It's never happening.
Although I say that, who the hell knows? It's the worst.
Fucking made the Assassin's Creed movie, so if anybody can do it. It has an IMDb page.
Okay.
I mean, that doesn't prove anything. But is that a going director? It's going to be an action crime thriller, and that's it. That's all the information they have. It also, there's a thing that links to The Splinter Cell from 2014, which is a live-action video game adaptation that follows the early years of Sam Fisher as he becomes the titular hero, The Splinter Cell. That's not... This is fake. This is not... It's a short movie. No.
Okay.
I'm leaving IMDb. I can't be on here.
All right. Anything else for Ubisoft?
New IP / what will... So this is more of the point. Every year since I think the debut of the first Watch Dogs, there has been a big game that they have put at the end, whether Train to Six Siege or Beyond Good and Evil 2, whatever, that is at the very end of their press conference. Do you have any predictions for that? It can't be Splinter Cell unless they're stupid, because we already know about Splinter Cell.
I don't know. I think there will be. I just don't know what it would be.
Yeah.
No one would have predicted Beyond Good and Evil 2 this time last year. So no.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Maybe it'll be Tom Clancy's The Division 2. Tom Clancy's The Division 3.
Okay.
Making both of them at the same time.
Oh, God.
But Ubisoft will have something that will probably be hard to predict. I mean, the one thing is that they'll come out and just be like, hey, we're finally like out from under the noose from Vivendi, which was trying to buy out Ubisoft for years. Which is one of the things that last year, Vivendi got very close to buying out Ubisoft. So there was like, that's one of the reasons why at the end of that Ubisoft press conference, everybody came out on stage and there was like weirdly tearful and people were like waving to the audience and like kind of like a final bow. And then that has, from like a lot of stuff like business maneuvering, I don't understand, that situation is no longer an issue. So maybe they'll just be like, fuck, man, they just Yves Guillemot, the CEO of Ubisoft, just goes out on stage and gets this drunk. It's just like, we fucking did it, guys. Oh my God, I love you. I love all of you.
That would be fun.
Yes.
That would be fun.
I'd like to see a drunk Eve. Moving on, Sony. So Sony is mostly a lot of known quantities. Death Stranding will be there. They have said this. I'm very excited. I hope that our theory we have peddled is true, that this is not a real video game. Nobody, Kojima, nobody at that studio is making a video game. They're just working on a trailer for like a whole year. They put out that trailer at the end of the year. And each one is more confusing and not connected at all to the last one.
And eventually it comes down to a giant embezzlement trial where Hideo Kojima goes down for taking Sony's money and never making a game.
Yeah. And then somebody on YouTube just like edits all the trailers together in like a semi like movie like format, and that is what Death Stranding is.
Yes.
Honestly, the Death Stranding trailer is the thing about this E3 that I know is definitely going to be there that I'm most excited for.
It's gonna be good.
It's gonna be good. It's gonna be weird. I'm excited. Ghost of Tsushima. This is the Sucker Punch like kind of samurai game that they premiered at Paris Week last year. I'm excited to see this game. They've basically just said it's gonna be at their E3. Of course it is. But we've only seen a like cinematic, so maybe hopefully we get like gameplay stuff.
Yeah,
get somebody on stage with a controller, and the demo breaks the first time, and then they like roll like canned footage of it actually working.
Yes,
Spider-Man will be there. They have said this.
Well, obviously, because it's coming out, maybe.
Yes, it's coming. I think it'll hit. It's, I think we get a specific date, I think, for sure. I think it will come out this fall.
Oh, it already has a date.
It doesn't have a specific date?
Yeah.
Good. Because I, as we went over when they had their big Game Informer thing, I'm very excited for this video game.
It was with the Game Informer thing, I think. Okay. So, yeah, I'm looking it up right now. But, okay.
Yes. Yeah. I typed in Spider-Man Sony, and then I realized that that's not a good way to find that video game. It's been Spider-Man PlayStation.
It's Spider-Man, or it's September 7th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I think it'll hit that date, because Sony is pretty good about that stuff. They only put out dates when they're pretty confident about it, with the large exception of The Last Guardian. Yes. That game did eventually come out. Yeah, like, I think we get a big game demo of Spider-Man. I think for sure we get somebody on stage with a controller playing that video game.
Yes.
The Last of Us Part 2, this is another game that they have just said is going to be on their press conference. I think this is also... looking at this, with obviously no Death Stranding is not going to have any gameplay thing, because it's not a video game. But I think there's a really strong possibility that all three Ghost of Tsushima, Spider-Man, and The Last of Us Part 2 get pretty meaty gameplay things.
I think
that would be a really good... That would make for a good E3 press conference when you probably don't have a lot of new stuff to announce, but like digging into the games that are coming out.
Yeah.
That seems like a good way to do it.
Because those are big, impressive games to have.
Yeah, and we have not seen any gameplay for The Last of Us Part 2 or Ghost of Tsushima, so I think that's what we get here. Days Gone has been officially delayed, so I don't know if it's here. My guess is they do not talk about that game.
Yeah, that's a game that very well could wind up never being a thing, so...
That's a game that should not have been at last year's E3. I don't think it's going to be.
It's been at, like, two or three E3s at this point, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I have no idea. I also think that... If they are showing Last of Us 2, they're not showing Days Gone. I don't think they put those next to each other.
No, I agree. Yeah, you don't have two zombie games right next to each other on the stage.
Especially one that looks very, very derivative of the other one.
Or the other way to phrase it, one of them looks a lot better than the other one.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's hard to compete with Naughty Dog. That's something that, you know, EA found out with Visceral.
Yes.
But yeah. Then that's all the stuff that we know for sure. Other stuff that's sort of speculation. Do you think that they at all talk about... the games they've already released this year, like God of War and Detroit Become Human, which just came out?
No on Detroit. The God of War thing is tough because Corey Barlog came out and said very definitively, no, we're not doing DLC.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's possible he very soon after that got a phone call from someone at Sony saying...
It's like, you sold like 5 or 6 million copies of God of War. We're maybe making some DLC, my man.
Yeah. If they're doing God of War DLC, it'll obviously be there.
Yes, because that's what they did with Horizon Zero Dawn last year. They did that Frozen Wilds DLC reveal.
I think it's also possible they don't do DLC for it that way. It would be weird. It would be very out of character. But maybe they just promised Corey, like, come back and make a God of War game for us. We won't make you do DLC. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, what I'm hoping, because I do really want some, like, a good bit of DLC for God of War, is I think it'd be cool if they did kind of the Uncharted Lost Legacy thing, maybe without the project ballooning into its own thing, but that concept of take some people who are, you know, really, like, you know, up and coming in the studio, let them lead a project while Corey Barlog and, like, some of the other people are working on God of War 2 or whatever it's going to be called, and have them make the DLC.
Yeah.
That would be cool. That's the situation I can see happening, you know? That's, like, Corey Barlog, when he said, I'm not making DLC for God of War, you stress the I really heavily. It's like, technically, he's right.
Yes. That could be the case.
Yeah, I think that's the only way that happens. I agree. I don't think they'd say anything about Detroit Become Human. But it did, like, just came out, like, last week, so.
And a lot of critics forgot to mention that that was made at a studio where everyone was abused horribly by the guy in charge. And a lot of critics decided to get down and suck David Cage's dick anyway, which I say is bad ethics.
Yes. And it's also, like, even regardless of all that bullshit, which it shouldn't be regardless of that bullshit, but if you're taking that stance of, like, you're not going to address that, it's also the reviews for that game are the same reviews for every fucking David Cage game that has ever come out, which told me I don't in any way need to check out Detroit Become Human, because it's like, I know it's a game that's going to have, like, a sexy presentation, you'll be kind of interested in it in the first 3 to 4 hours, and then you will get, like, halfway through the game and realize, oh, the story is terrible. You'll get at the end of the game and be like, I can't believe that somebody gave people a lot of money to make this story, and then you'll be confused at how anybody thought it was good.
It is a series of the Emperor Has No Clothes scenarios,
yeah.
But everyone just expects the next time the Emperor's going to have clothes on this time. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, people listening to this podcast are wondering why none of us have talked about Detroit Become Human. It's because we're not interested in playing it.
Yeah, fuck off.
Moving on. Destiny expansion. This has been basically leaked by Walmart with the weird Destiny comment thing. And then actually later they officially said that they're going to reveal it on June 5th, which is coming up very soon.
Yes.
I think almost certainly there will be some sort of trailer for whatever the big fall expansion, like the Taken King style thing for Destiny 2, will be on Sony stage, because that's how Activision always shows up at Sony stage.
Have you touched any of the Destiny 2 DLC?
Nope. I've not touched Destiny 2 in this calendar year.
I don't know what to say about Destiny 2 at this point. I think they both polished Destiny 1 very well and also made it into something I have no long-term interest in.
Yeah.
Destiny 2, I've said this before, it is like the silence from Doctor Who. When I am looking at it, I know it's there. When I look away, all memory of its existence disappears, and I think that is true of all of us, because Destiny 2 has fallen so far out of the conversation.
Yeah.
I don't know. Even Bungie seems like they want to kind of get away from it.
I am curious to see, like, if they are... I mean, we know that they're working on a big expansion that's not, like, the little... Because they've released two small things,
yes,
which is the same strategy they used for Destiny 1. I question why they use the same DLC strategy for Destiny 1
and
Destiny 2.
This is the issue, is that Destiny 2 has fallen into so word-for-word the exact same narrative as Destiny 1, down to now everyone's like, will the new expansion save Destiny? And I think a lot of us, like you and me, are just done with it. Like, if you weren't going to get it right, we're not going to go through it all again. I have no energy for the annual cycle of Destiny rebuilding itself. I'm out. Like, maybe it'll be cool. I can't do it all the time. This has been since the beginning of this generation.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's too much.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what it is, but I would be surprised if they could convince me to come back. Like, it would have to be a big change.
Yeah.
Other Activision thing, I think almost certainly Call of Duty Black Ops 1111 will be on the stage. I wrote it in their stupid thing.
Yes.
They had a big reveal event a couple of weeks ago, I think, where they talked about, they like very slyly just went like, and we're not doing single player, but we're putting a bunch of zombies in this game. So if you like the zombies mode, there's that, and there's multiplayer, and then we're working on some sort of battle royale thing that we're not, I think it's called like blackout mode or something,
yes,
and we're not going to talk about that. Have you heard the story of what happened at that event in terms of how they pitched not having the like jump stuff and wall running for Black Ops 4?
No.
Okay, so because I listened to some video game podcasts, I think it specifically was on Waypoint Radio, I remember hearing this story, was they had their event, and so like a bunch of the people at these events are like influencer YouTube bullshit people, right?
Yeah.
And so apparently, again, this is hearsay because I was not there, obviously, but according to multiple versions of the story I've heard, they basically went out on stage and they said, is this game going to have jetpacks in it? And everybody, but the Call of Duty people, the conference went, no! And they're like, no, it's not. Is this going to have wall running in it? And everyone went, no! And it's like, no, this game's not. And it's like, it sounded terrifying to me. It sounded like you're at like a fucking, like the most, you know, well-intentioned, like not evil version of like a fascist, like assemblage of people. It's like, what is even happening here? Which is, it's particularly baffling because all that shit got introduced in Black Ops 3, which was a game that these people telling you that all that stuff is bullshit made. Like, they made the one that introduced that stuff. And then now they're telling you they're taking it out, and everyone's super excited. It was like, what the fuck is happening with Call of Duty? That, it sounded so terrifying to me. It's like the description of that event, and then being like, do you like this bullshit we put in the video game? No, we're giving you slow Call of Duty. We're giving you old Call of Duty. We're giving you Call of Duty that doesn't have new stuff in it. It's like everyone's really excited. What is that?
Again, Call of Duty is in the white dwarf phase of its life.
Uh-huh.
It is compacting back onto itself. For its slow heat death,
yeah,
when it finally just kind of disappears into nothingness.
It becomes a neutron star, and if they're very lucky, it will beat neutron degeneracy pressure, which is when it shrinks to like an incredibly small size, and that's when all the material around it slams into it, but you can't get anything denser than something that's beat neutron degeneracy pressure, so that all the material blasts out and it becomes a supernova, and then maybe if it's a really big, you know, neutron star, it then overcomes a certain area of gravity that then it starts sucking in light. That's your lesson on
you lost astrophysics. The metaphor a little bit, but yes.
Yes. And then it's called the Black Hole 4. I brought it back around. Impressed, aren't you?
All right, we're getting off topic.
VR, question mark.
No.
I think they will say, they have PSVR. They had like 4 PSVR games last year. People kind of like that mouse one called Moss that has a mouse in it.
Right.
I think there will be at least one PSVR game.
Okay.
Do they hold a funeral for the Vita?
No. The Vita hasn't even been mentioned since
2014, 2015, yeah. Maybe. And the last time it was mentioned, it was in a very offhand way.
Yes.
No, I think they should hold a funeral for the Vita.
Like, I think they should like do a Viking funeral.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Viking funeral, like God of War style. You bring, what is his name, Christopher Priest or whatever, who played Kratos in the new God of War, and have him like conduct it and fire an arrow that sets him on fire. You know that guy is good at archery. yeah.
Okay.
This is the Vita. Do you think they make any sort of hardware announcements?
No.
No, I agree. Indie stuff. There will be some indie stuff.
Yes, there will.
It's just like, if those games are impossible to predict because we have no idea what they would be. Other third-party stuff that might be on the stage. Like, obviously Activision will be there. We went over those.
Something from Square Enix will be there.
Yeah, maybe something that, like, they showed a trailer in their thing and then it also shows up at Sony stage.
Yes. I think it's possible Shadow of the Tomb Raider is not the big thing on the Square Enix show, and either Microsoft, not Microsoft, because of what happened last time.
But I think Sony
could get the big gameplay demo for that. I think that's possible.
I agree. I also have here, like, I'm not necessarily think that these are going to be here, but they were the games that I thought of is Yakuza, Shenmue, and Monster Hunter, which are all, like, not Sony related, but are, like, I mean, Yakuza really only comes out on Sony consoles. Because they mostly are popular in Japan. So
yes.
Like, it's just they come out of Sony consoles as a matter of fact. But yeah, so I think there's a small chance that they mention something about Yakuza. A smaller chance that they mention something about Shenmue. And I don't think Monster Hunter is going to come up because that game just came out early this year.
Yeah.
But it did. But Monster Hunter World did premiere on Sony stage. So do you think they show off any remakes for anything? Because that's something they've done a couple of times, like Shadow of the Colossus.
What would it be, do you think, that they have...
Know.
In the docket. I don't know.
Maybe it would be timely to do like a God of War thing.
They could put out a 1 and 2 remaster because they have 3.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like if they were ever going to do that, they would have done it already.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do we finally get any sort of backwards compatibility announcement?
No. That's not happening on the PlayStation 4. That ship
we're
has
never
sailed.
Playing PS1, 2, or 3 games on the PS4.
No.
Okay.
Ship has sailed. If they were going to, like,
it's
they
so
have
weird.
Entered the last stage of the console life cycle or whatever, however that was phrased. They're not going to do backwards compatibility.
Yeah. They were done giving us new features year one.
Maybe they'll let you change your name on the PSN.
No, they will not.
That's not happening. Moving on to the last company, and then we'll do some wrap-up stuff. Nintendo.
Nintendo!
Super Smash Brothers!
My boys. It is going to be the Super Smash Brothers show.
Yes, that is going to be the main focus, the way that like Zelda or Mario Odyssey was.
Yes.
We have broken through the power of sheer logic that the Rabbids will be playable.
Yes.
In Super Smash Brothers, and that will either be on Ubiquitous Software stage or on Nintendo's.
I think that'll be on Nintendo's.
Yes, and not stage in their video, obviously.
Yes.
Switch ports. There will be a lot of Switch ports. There have been leaked Dragon Ball FighterZ. Fortnite, because of course, Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate, which I think already came out in Japan, but did not come out over here. FIFA, if you're very excited for FIFA after EA, you'll probably get a little bit more FIFA at Nintendo. Killer Queen Black, which is one of those, it's not a new game, it's a game from like 2013 that nobody knows about, but it was one of the logos leaked. Starlink Battle for Atlas, which we've discussed. Paladins, which I think is an Overwatch kind of shooter game. And Overcooked 2, which is a sequel to Overcooked 1, which was an indie game that people like.
And you said Dragon Ball FighterZ?
Yes, that was the first one.
I'm just excited for that.
Yes.
Because I have it on PS4. I never have the time to play it on PS4. I will be rebuying it on Nintendo Switch, because that's where it should have been in the first place.
My one concern with that is, granted, I have not spent a lot of time playing the Nintendo Switch, but the D-pad situation on the Nintendo Switch is not great.
People make too much of that. The D-pad is fine. The one on the Joy-Con is perfectly fine, and honestly, I think would be more than usable for this sort of thing, because it is fairly precise, because you know where the buttons are, and it's very close, and you can roll on them very easily, and not accidentally go in one direction or the other. It's fine. I've played full platformers with that.
But, like, the demands of a fighting game are very different than the demands of a platformer. So
sure.
It's like, I have heard people, like with the Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection that just came out, people talking about trying to figure out what is a good... Yeah, because I think you can get some fighting sticks now on the Switch. But if you are really into fighting games, that's something to keep in mind.
You can also use the control sticks for it, though.
Those, no.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
It's not. No. That's
all right.
No.
Well, there's the Pro Controller.
Yes, but isn't does but I thought it doesn't like the D-pad on that.
Weird, yeah, because
it like
really
has
good.
Like weird input stuff.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay, what else we got?
Mario Tennis Aces will be there. That's another yes. one of the logos that was in that leaked thing.
I don't think they're going to do a ton on it because it's coming out very soon. It's June 22nd. But the demo is out. I have the demo. I have not played it yet because I was busy with the Persona games. Everyone loves it. It's apparently
people
very
like
good.
It a lot more than that Wii U one that got bad buzz.
Oh, I mean, people have been comparing it to like the GameCube one that everyone loved. So I'm psyched for it. I might even just skip the demo and wait for the full game because I know I'm going to get it. I know I'm going to play it. It looks very good.
Yeah. Next up is something that has already been revealed and had a little bit of stuff about it that was leaked and rumored for a while is Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Pokemon Let's Go Eevee, which are the two versions of that.
I wanted to talk about this because what a weird announcement.
Yes. Wasn't the Pokemon something that also came out on the Switch?
Yeah, there's like Pokemon Quest or something that is out. It's a free-to-play game that's also going to be coming out on iOS. It's interesting. These games look cool to me. Like, they look interesting. These are not the big new Switch Pokemon RPGs.
No, it's not the one that they announced last year that they were working on.
Yeah, the Pokemon Company even came out preemptively and said on Twitter, there will be a new core series RPG Pokemon game in 2019 for the Nintendo Switch. So, like, the next generation, you know, Pokemon Gray and Purple.
Pokemon,
I don't know.
Fuck off. We're done with titles.
Yeah. Whatever it is, that is not this.
Pokemon 2.
But I did, like, watching the trailer, there are some cool things about this. Like, it's Pokemon Go related, but it is also a remake of Pokemon, like, Red, Blue, Yellow.
Yeah.
So it's in the Kanto region. It is a full, like, 3D game now, which looks kind of cool. Like, I don't think the graphics are as developed as they're going to be in next year's title.
Yeah.
But it is still kind of cool to see a big home console Pokemon game like this. It's cool to see Kanto again. It uses the Pokemon Go mechanics for catching Pokemon, but then there are also battles, so I'm not sure what the relationship between those are.
It seemed like that there are trainer battles, but every time they found a wild Pokemon in the grass, there was no combat with them. And like not just like there was no combat, like the menu did not have a fight option. So it just seemed like you would counter wild Pokemon and you just catch them, but you have trainer battles, so I don't know how like the leveling situation, all that works.
That's my big question mark. Everything else looks kind of cool about it to me. It seems like it could be an interesting game. They're doing that new controller, the Pokeball Plus, which looks kind of funny. I don't know. This game could be cool. Like, people are kind of down on it, and I get it. Look, I've never even played Pokemon Go. I've never even installed it. It's like, it's not a game for me.
It's not a game for people who live in Colorado unless you live, like, in the middle of Denver.
Yes. So, who knows? This could be an interesting game. But also, like, people getting down about it, it's like, this is not taking away from your other Pokemon games. Yeah. You know, this is going to be a little morsel to tide you over.
Yeah. One thing that I thought was interesting is because at the beginning of the trailer, they had, like, a long lineup of the different logos of, like, Nintendo, Game Freak, Pokemon Company, but Niantic was not on there. Niantic being the company that makes Pokemon Go.
Niantic is not working on this game.
Yeah,
we know that.
So I'm, like, curious to see what that means for Pokemon Go itself in the future, like what this game's relationship to that is going to be. Like, obviously it's smart of them to try to capitalize on that Pokemon Go phenomena. I'm just curious if this is going to have that crossover appeal.
Yeah.
Like, anything Pokemon related is going to be successful by, like, you know, relative margin. But I'm curious to see if, like, well, I mean, no, like, the casual crowd that went for Pokemon Go will not go for this game because, like, you know, like hundreds of millions of people downloaded Pokemon Go. They have not sold hundreds of millions of Switches. Like, the scale is just different, right?
Right, but I don't think they're expecting hundreds of millions of people.
No, yeah.
I think they're expecting to sell in a holiday period where they are also going to have Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Having a Pokemon game out there is smart. This is going to attract not necessarily like your grandma who never played anything else but tried Pokemon Go, but it is going to attract maybe a lot of people who don't play Pokemon regularly, who are getting a... Because a lot of people getting a Switch are people who have not owned a console in a very long time, if ever. Like, I think this game is going to sell like fucking gangbusters. And I think it's that... Between that and Smash Bros., the Switch is going to have a huge holiday.
Yeah.
Like, I would not underestimate this game. And I would also say, like, we don't know how the leveling and all that stuff is going to work, but this looks like a full Pokemon game. Like,
yeah.
I would not underestimate this. I think this could wind up being a very smart, different kind of Pokemon title. You might have to leave some preconceptions at the door. It could be bad. It could be. But Pokemon games, like, generally come out with a certain level of polish. Even the spinoffs. I mean, there's actually been a lot of cool Pokemon spinoffs. So
make a Pokemon Snap 2.
Yeah, I would not underestimate this thing. I think this sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'm really curious to hear more about it because it's like with the trailer they gave, because there's quite a bit of footage there, but there's no context for any of it. So it's like, there's a lot of... do you just not battle wild Pokemon? Like, what is the larger... Do you go to gyms? Like, how does, like, that larger structure work? How does the... Because I think they also... One of the things they said that people were disappointed by was there's no online stuff, which seems weird. So, yeah. Like, I'm just curious to get more info about, like, what that game is. How much of it is Pokemon? How much of it is Go, right?
Right.
Where's that split? Yoshi for Nintendo Switch. The game's not out yet, and there's still no title for it.
They're going to show it.
Yeah, they're going to show it. Like, it was just something I was surprised at, because the Kirby one came out and got its title and everything. But, like, because they showed that Kirby one and Yoshi one at the same time last year. And I thought it was interesting that the Yoshi game has not had more info for it.
I think everyone's expecting that's, like, an August game or something. Yeah, so I think that's coming pretty soon.
I'm excited to play Yoshi 2 on the Nintendo Switch. Metroid Prime 4.
Not this... Well, I don't know. I really don't... We don't so little about this game.
Yeah.
We don't even technically know for sure who's developing it. Like, there have been reports that it's Bandai Namco. I don't think it's literally they gave it to a Bandai Namco team. It sounds like it's what they did with Smash 4 for Wii U and 3DS, which is that it is a Nintendo internal team, and they borrowed a bunch of Bandai employees to fill the ranks. I think that's what Metroid Prime 4 is. So... But we don't know. I think the other persistent rumor, because I think a lot of people want it to be true, myself included, is that they're going to do a Prime Trilogy port for Switch.
Right, yeah.
Which they should. And I think if Metroid is here, that'll be the thing, and that'll be later this year. I mean, it would be smart. I think you want that on Switch as a foundation for Metroid Prime 4 eventually.
Especially, like you're saying, the Switch audience is different than necessarily like the audience that has always been buying the Nintendo home consoles. So a lot of them have not played Metroid Prime.
Yes. Or they haven't played it in a very long time. Yeah.
Or they only played the first one and didn't play the other two.
Yeah, so I think... I honestly, that would be a prediction. I want it to happen, so I'm a little biased here. Yeah. But I think we could see that. I don't think Metroid Prime 4 is this year. And, you know, Nintendo is very confident about what they show. If it is this year, they'll show it.
It was uncharacteristic that they teased Metroid Prime 4 at all as early as they did.
I think it's honestly, they also had that Return of Samus game coming out for 3DS, and I think they wanted to reassure people that, like, the brand is in good hands again.
They wanted to avoid, like, what happened with the Donkey Kong Country stuff of people just rioting because they're not getting the game you want from the studio you want.
Yeah. So
it's like, don't worry, we're making the thing you want also, but we can also make other games too.
Yes, exactly. So, we'll see. I think there will be Metroid something because I think they want to keep up that hype train. But they've even directly said they're only showing games for this year. And I don't think Metroid Prime 4 is that close. Also because it would be weird to release that and Smash Bros. And Pokemon and Yoshi all around the same time.
I mean, I certainly don't think that Metroid Prime 4 is coming out this year. I'm just curious if they're going to say anything about it in that.
I mean, it's possible they're going to take a Zelda approach to this. Because Zelda is the one series they do differently, where they will tease for years. They don't even do that to Mario. Like, Mario Odyssey was 6 months out, we learned about it. You know? I do think it's possible we get, like, maybe a cinematic tease every year for Metroid Prime 4 until the game comes out. But other than that, I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I would also honestly be surprised if they did some sort of remastered Metroid Prime trilogy. That seems like... Like Nintendo, that just doesn't feel like Nintendo to me. Like they will do their like Wii U game on the Switch. I don't think they'll go that far back from Metroid Prime. I think it's possible.
I'm not
bet on it though.
But there have been reporting that that's something Bandai Namco is working on.
Sure.
So as part of their deal
I can
with
see
Nintendo.
That like if they outsource it to Bandai Namco.
Yeah.
Okay. Octopath Traveler is releasing. We talked about it July 13th. It might be it's Switch exclusive, so I would be surprised if there was a trailer.
Oh, they'll definitely have that. Yeah.
The Shin Megami Tensei 5, do you think they say anything about that?
It depends on how far along it is, but it's been at a lot of their shows, so I kind of doubt it, because it feels like there's a lot of other things happening that are more pressing, because Shin Megami Tensei 5 is not this year.
No, definitely.
So, probably not.
I agree. The Retro Studios thing, they're rumored Star Fox
Grand Prix. Yes, we're seeing that, and yes, it's real.
Okay, I agree. I think that's for sure what is happening.
Yeah,
I am.
It's going to be. It's their big planned surprise that is no longer a surprise.
Yes, I'm very excited and concerned for all the F-Zero fans out there. It's going to be rough for you, but you'll get through this. This is like just like wild speculation. Super Mario Maker 2.
No,
I don't think so either. But
I think it could happen in the future. It's not going to happen this year.
Yes, I agree. I think it would be silly of them to not be making a Super Mario Maker sequel, but I don't think it'll be showing off this year. Anything about Nintendo Labo? cardboard.
Maybe.
Cardboard King.
I don't know how well that did.
It did not do that well.
Okay.
No. There's a lot of Nintendo Labo sitting on store shelves. Yeah. That might also be one of the volleys to try to sink Canadian Walmart.
Yes.
Even though Nintendo didn't get caught up much in that.
I mean, the Labo thing is weird because, yeah, I've seen it on Best Buy shelves, which makes me think, like, oh, it must not be doing well. But everyone loves it who's had it. Like,
yeah, people like it for sure.
Yeah. I don't think so, because Labo wasn't in... That was just a random side presentation anyway.
Yes.
I think it's a little experiment. I don't think Nintendo's business is riding on it or anything. I don't think we see anything about
it. I agree.
It.
I will say that there is a really good... I think it is on the American English Nintendo YouTube channel, a video of Bill Nye the Science Guy playing around with Nintendo Labo.
Nice.
People should check that out, because it's very cool. It's not as good as the crazy shit that is on the Japanese Nintendo YouTube channel, which if you understand Japanese and you're not checking that shit out, it's fucking whack, and you should be on there, because Japanese Nintendo is so cooler and way more interesting than in English Nintendo. Any sort of hardware announcement, like a Switch Plus or something like that?
It's way too early.
Yeah,
no.
I agree. VR question mark?
No.
Yes. It's finally time.
What would that be? Would that be you strap the Switch to your face?
That's what I was going to... No. The Nintendo 3DS, it is the most blocky...
Yes.
It's like you strap it right over your eyes. No. That's just... I just put it in there for goofs.
Okay.
Animal Crossing, question mark? That's one of like the big Nintendo franchises that has not made it to the Switch yet.
I have an instinct that no, because I think that's next year. I think Animal Crossing is going to be one of their tentpoles next year. Like, clearly they've had a plan of, like, year by year for the Switch. Like, year one was Mario and Zelda. Year two is Smash Bros. With a lot of other, like, smaller tentpoles kind of making up in quantity.
Yeah.
And I think Animal Crossing is probably a year three plan. So, they could do the Metroid Prime 4 thing of, like, there's a tease, it's in development, but I don't think that plays the same when it's Animal Crossing.
Or they could do, because don't forget, the way that the Pokemon game got announced was them just literally, like, with, like, a dude in an office being like, we're working on the new Pokemon game also. That's,
yes,
like, how that game was announced. I would love if that's what it was. If they were,
yes,
like, talking about something else that, like, the Animal Crossing studio was working with, and then it's like, and the guy's like, turns to the camera and's like, by the way, we're also working on an Animal Crossing game for the Nintendo Switch.
If Animal Crossing were this year, that would be the most crazy busy year for Nintendo ever, so I just don't think so.
Certainly not coming out this year, but there might be a teaser at the most. Any sort of phone stuff, sort of kind of connected to the Animal Crossing thing a little bit.
Not on E3. They do their phone stuff. They don't generally show it on E3.
Super Mario Run 2.
No.
Coming to the iPhone near you. No. And that's all I have for Nintendo, but you're the Nintendo guy. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, Fire Emblem is a big thing rumored.
Oh, I didn't see those rumors.
Yeah, I mean, we know there is another big one in development. They've been saying for years that the next mainline Fire Emblem game, so the sequel to Fates, basically, is a Switch game. And there have been varying reports that that could be this year, like that they're ready for it this year. It has been... Fates was 2015 or 2016?
I want to look it up.
Well, you know what? I think it was 2015 in Japan, and I think it was 2016 in America. So it's been 3 years, basically.
But it was also three video games. So.
Yes, it was also three video games, and the Switch obviously...
I don't know how that affects your projections.
It's also their first game on new hardware, obviously. But people are excited for it. I think we see something about the new Fire Emblem game. I don't think it's a game for this fall, but I could be wrong. You know, I've said that about a couple of Nintendo games over the last 2 years, of like, that has to be later, and it's been sooner. And, you know, Fire Emblem, obviously their relationship with Intelligent Systems is very tight, and they probably had access to the Switch before, you know, any other second or third party studio. So I think we see something about the new Fire Emblem.
Yeah. I honestly think the reason why I forgot to throw Fire Emblem on there is because there have been so many spin-offs with like the Dynasty Warriors stuff that it has felt like Fire Emblem is more recent.
Right, and we had Fire Emblem Echoes last year on the 3DS. We had Fire Emblem Warriors on the Switch. So there has been a lot of Fire Emblem. But like that core team has been in the background working on the next mainline one.
Okay.
So who knows?
Yes, and you were right about the dates. It was 2015 Japan, 2016 international.
So for that team, it was 2015.
Yes.
They were done then. So
you
yeah.
I think that they're going to make... 4 or 5 video games in one Fire Emblem now, just to say fuck it.
I think they are never doing that again.
No, it seemed like a lot.
I love Fire Emblem Fates, but they are never doing that again.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing I would say about Nintendo is like, Smash Brothers predictions. Like, I think Smash Brothers is going to be the thing a lot of people are going to come away from E3 talking about this year, because it's going to suck up a lot of oxygen.
I'm very excited. Originally, I just had it Smash Brothers. It is now Super Duper Smash Brothers on my list.
That would be a great title. Yes. Super Duper Smash Brothers for Nintendo Switch. I don't know. I think there is... I am so curious about this, because I think there is still an open question if this is truly Smash 5... or if it is like Smash 4.5. If it is Smash 4 from the Wii U with new stuff, but is it like Smash Definitive Edition? Or is it Smash Plus?
Smash DX or whatever, like what the Mario Kart 8 was?
Yeah, it was just called Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Yeah. But yeah, so I don't think it's quite that. It's not just going to be a straight port. I also don't think, just after 4 years, I don't think it's soon enough to have all new Smash Brothers that feels like a totally different thing. But I could be wrong. I don't know.
Wasn't Smash Brothers 4 like kind of a smaller step up from Brawl than like one Melee Brawl was, where those were pretty distinct different games?
No, I would say it's the same as Melee to Brawl or Brawl to 4. Okay. Yeah. I think this one will be a smaller gap. Because this one did rework a lot. Like, 4... If you remember, Brawl has a lot of criticisms on it because of how slow it is and some of those things. And definitely the Wii U 3DS one reworked a lot of that. It's got some different mechanics, like the stage grabbing and stuff. Just the graphical style. It's the first HD one. The 3DS had the different solo modes. I'm very curious. I mean, this is one of my most anticipated games of the year, if not just straight up my most anticipated. Right. So I'm very excited. I think they've got, you know, some new characters in the house who could be, you know, playable. So we'll see.
So we know for sure the Splatoon people are going to be there, because that's how they teased it. We also know for sure, again, through the power of logic, that the Rabbids are going to be there.
Yes.
Who else?
Bayonetta already came in.
Well, yeah, that, like, that's, but stuff that has not been in any of the previous games.
I'm just, what I was saying Bayonetta would be, I was thinking that, I'm like, no, they added her in DLC.
Bayonetta 3. Do you think they're going to talk about Bayonetta 3? I forgot about Bayonetta 3.
That's a good point. No, not yet.
Okay.
I think it's too early.
That was easy. Captain Toad. Is Captain Toad going to be in Smash Brothers?
Should be. I'm not quite sure what the moveset would be. Captain Toad will, there will be a Captain Toad map, and I think there will be a Captain Toad, like, assist trophy or something. I don't think Captain Toad will be a character.
I think there will also for sure be a Super Mario Maker level.
Yeah.
That will be, they'll be like making a Mario level or whatever.
That actually is already in Smash Wii U. It was a DLC thing. It's okay. I think Zelda characters are finally going to get an upgrade in their models.
Right,
because they've been Twilight Princess for a while, and even then Twilight Princess looked like the Melee people, so I think we're going to get Breath of the Wild-inspired Zelda people.
Yes.
I think Mario maybe finally ditches the stupid flood thing and has the cap finally.
Did he have that in Smash 4?
Yes.
What the fuck?
Yeah, they gave it for 3 fucking games, his stupid flood pack, which is a horrible move that's worthless.
Fucking bullshit. Yeah, they will for sure make him a cappy Mario. I'm looking at some of this stuff. Do you think Goku finally makes it? Because they're doing the Dragon Ball FighterZ port.
If Nintendo had that, of like, they do their list of ports, they end with Dragon Ball FighterZ, and then they transition to Smash Bros. By having, like, Goku fly in with Mario.
Yeah.
It would burn down the internet. They would win E3 forever. They would shut down E3 because Nintendo had so thoroughly won it. Like, if E3 is a competition, they found the golden ticket. It's over. That's what that would be. I think it's unlikely. I do think it's possible.
It is feasible.
It is feasible.
I have also typed into my notes, Goku Amiibo! !!
God, that'd be so cool. Yes, they're doing a Goku Amiibo, definitely.
Yes. Whether it's for Super Smash Brothers or Dragon Ball FighterZ, you get like a dumb color set for Goku if you get the Goku Amiibo.
Yes.
Fortnite guy. I'm just looking at other games that are coming out on Switch. Fortnite. But it's so popular. Fortnite guy.
Yeah, no.
A Monster Hunter. I think Monster Hunter is a character in Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, so there's precedence.
I kind of doubt it.
Yeah.
They tend to pick very recognizable, you know, people for this. So
that's true.
Yeah. I don't know.
Like the Rabbids.
Yeah. All right, that's probably enough speculation on Nintendo and everything. We will probably hear about the Nintendo Online service as well.
That's true.
So we'll see if there's anything new about that. I don't know. Nintendo's got a lot of balls up in the air. I'm curious about their conference.
I agree. Yeah, so, it's one of the more interesting ones. It's one of the more interesting ones every year.
Yeah, and remember, they're going to do, as they do every year, their hours of Treehouse stuff,
which
they do announcements during. Like, we learned about that new Metroid game during the Treehouse thing, and they're like, oh yeah, and it's completely done and it's coming in 2 months, you know? So, like, I think there will be big things like that, too. So, it's going to be something to think about throughout that day, what else they're going to have.
That's actually made me think of another point of conversation around Nintendo, is do you think there will be, and how much will there be, of Nintendo 3DS stuff?
Some, because they've already shown, like, we had the conference earlier this year where they announced the Luigi's Mansion thing. We got WarioWare Gold, the next Mario and Luigi one. They're mostly kind of remakes and ports at this point. But yeah, I think they will do something also like they did last year with Metroid, because the 3DS is still has a very big install base. It still moves systems pretty well. It's slowed down now that the Switch is out.
Yeah.
But you know, remember that just a couple of years ago, the 3DS was selling better than it ever had because of Pokemon Sun and Moon.
Right.
So yes, there will be something about the 3DS. I think the main E3 show will be Switch heavy because it didn't make sense. And that's how it was last year, too. But the 3DS is not dead. I think people want the 3DS to be dead. It is not. And I will remind everyone that Atlas, maybe this will help us transition in a second, has said Persona Q2 is a thing, and it's coming to the 3DS.
Right, yes.
We could see that at the Nintendo show.
That would be a treehouse thing, for sure. I don't think that would be in their main video. But before we transition, I want to do... There's a couple of other points of order that are outside of the specific conferences. That I didn't know where to put this. Borderlands 3 from the Canadian Walmart leak is a thing. Where is Borderlands 3 at E3?
Microsoft.
I agree. Yes, Microsoft. It has to be. It has to be because Microsoft is so desperate. It's like they would make the move. Sony doesn't need to make the move. Sony has more than enough shit to put in their conference. I think for sure Borderlands 3, that shows up at Microsoft stage. A game from Rocksteady. They have not made a game or like teased anything or seen anything since Arkham Knight from 2015.
I don't think so this year.
No, I think there'll be some. It's been 3 years since we've heard anything.
And that's what makes me think we're going to keep waiting.
I'm going to be the optimist in this conversation to say we're going to hear.
What do we think they're making?
Fucking, I don't know.
Finally, that Superman game we all want.
They're not making a Superman game. Okay. I don't even. Yeah, I don't know if they're even working on a DC property. I mean, they are.
They're making a Suicide Squad game.
Yes, they're making a Suicide Squad game based on the movie. And it's a very late movie tie-in.
It'll be their Mass Effect Andromeda. It'll be the end of
them. But the costumes are going to look so good.
Yes.
We already talked about Red Dead Redemption 2. How many Battle Royale bullshit games are going to be at E3 this year, Jonathan?
Too many.
That is the right answer. That's the very much the right answer. There's going to be a bunch. I think that's going to be the, like, filler bullshit on Microsoft. There's going to be a couple of those. There's going to be...
Sean, I just had an idea.
Okay,
This is... If I call this, I'm going to be so happy. Where would you put the over-under on chances that there's a Minecraft Battle Royale announced at Microsoft show this year?
Fuck. Oh,
I'm right.
Rabbids and Smash Brothers all over again. You've broken the story through the power of sheer logic.
Yes.
Yes. Because they've been so desperate to find something to talk about with Minecraft, because obviously Minecraft is still one of the biggest video games in the world, even if it's not like, you know, it doesn't get the attention that Fortnite's getting right now like it used to, but it still sells like crazy. It's still a huge property for them to have. There's just nothing to talk about with Minecraft, just in fucking Minecraft. There's nothing to talk about with Minecraft this whole console generation, other than we're making more of it. So yes, that's what they have announced.
Minecraft Battle Royale.
100 Steves parachute onto an island and they fucking go and make wooden swords and beat each other up with it as giant electric walls close in around them.
I think that's happening.
It has to be happening. I'm gonna type it in so that I remember it.
Yes,
to look for Minecraft Battle Royale. Fuck. That would be so good. I will agree with that prediction.
Yep.
And then there will just be a bunch of other ones scattered around, whether it's on a press conference or just on the show floor, they will be there. And then we kind of talked about this throughout, but like, there's going to be a bunch of Switch ports. That's going to be something that this will be the year for. Again, I don't know where this will feature. I think there will be a bit of it kind of everywhere. This is, I think, going to be the year for Western third parties talking about we're going to put out a bunch of our old games on the Switch.
Yes, as they should.
Yes.
We want them.
And that's all I have in my E3 notes.
Did you hear the news that Bungie has a Chinese online game company called NetEase has taken a minority stake in the company for $100 million?
Yes.
I don't think we'll see anything about this at E3.
No, because it just happened.
The Bungie is becoming a multi-IP studio.
Yes, because specifically the story is that they're working on a new IP alongside Destiny.
I view this as Bungie is creating an exit ramp out the back. This is like the Shawshank Redemption. They're working in the library during the day, and at night they pull back their Rita Hayworth poster, and they are shoveling by night.
At the end of it, Jason Jones is just crouching in the mud, rain pouring down on him, and screaming into the sky, "I made it out!"
Yes.
It's like fucking, like it's like Activision, people from Activision with like guard outfits are like searching around with flashlights.
Yes.
Can't find Jason Jones, he's made it out.
So that's what Bungie's up to.
That's not going to be at E3, but it's something to pay attention to for the future.
Yes. All right. It's going to be an interesting one.
Yes. I am filled with the same emotions I'm always filled about on the eve of E3, which is I'm excited about it. I'm trepidatious about it. I'm concerned. I actually haven't asked you. Are you planning on watching all the conferences or just like scooping up the news afterwards? Because you know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I'm definitely watching Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo. I do those every year.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can bring myself to watch EA. I feel like I should out of like moral solidarity with you.
Yeah, and it's just like it's going to be a train wreck no matter what.
I'm going to watch Bethesda. I'm going to watch
because Bethesda's always
good. Yes, I'm going to watch Square Enix because I'm super curious about that one. Mm-hmm. I will probably try to do all of them because why not? You know, I actually have some. Luckily, like E3 is landing right as I'm finishing a bunch of work.
It is exact same for me. Yeah.
So I'm that's why we're being able to do the daily podcast. So I think I will watch all of it and sharing it with you.
Regardless of whether or not it would be something that I could feasibly do, I would do it anyways because I'm a bad person.
Last year, I did watch everything except EA. EA is the one I usually skip. Maybe I'll try it this year. I'll be there for Anthem at least. I don't know.
Fucking man, there's so much FIFA to hear about. They're going to bring out some sort of soccer-related celebrity. 2 years ago it was Pele. Last year it was people who are like comedians in some way affiliated with soccer.
They need to have the FIFA game with a story mode where you embezzle money from poor countries. And
what if 100 soccer players parachute onto an island and there's a goal in the middle and they all have to go try to score a goal?
I thought you were going to say they have to kill each other. It's just PUBG but with soccer players.
It's actually made in collaboration with the PUBG Corporation. It's a separate version of PUBG with the FIFA license, and so it's
has real soccer players.
Yeah, it has the likenesses of all the great soccer men like the Pele.
And David Beckham,
and you bend it.
Yes.
He bends it like he's Beckham.
Yes, and it's just a fight to the death, and this is the ultimate FIFA corruption, is they're just killing their players now.
How great would it be if at this E3, just basically every single video game that we didn't know about already was just a Battle Royale spinoff of like Need for Speed Battle Royale, Star Wars Battle Royale.
What if Metroid Prime 4 is a Metroid Prime Battle Royale spinoff?
Yep.
And just to like pull the rug out from Metroid fans again.
Yes, it's just like you thought like Federation Forces was as low we were going to go with this franchise.
We don't know.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
We don't know a lot about that Yoshi game. Yoshi Battle Royale.
I mean, because it's good with Yoshi because you can't do it with Mario because there's not enough Mario people to make up 100 characters. But you can have as many Yoshis as you want. They're just all different colored Yoshis. Yep. They just all lick each other to death.
All right. You want to move on, Sean?
What else is there to talk about other than E3, Jonathan?
The greatest fucking video games ever made!
If the video games that if they're smart, they'll announce English versions at this E3, and that'll be like the mic drop at the end of Sony's press conference.
Yes, it is very weird that I have platinumed both of these games and there is not an English announcement yet.
Yeah.
I feel like Atlas is playing a weird game here, but we'll see. But yes, let's talk about Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight and Persona 5 Dancing Star Knight.
Good job, Jonathan.
For the PlayStation 4 and Vita, if you want to get
them
there.
I think that is the first time you've ever said those two names in succession accurately.
Yes. So you got the cool, super awesome Special Mega Edition.
Yes, with the soundtrack and the lyrics and everything.
My brother got skittish and only bought 5, and then he loved it so much, he just went back and bought the full Special Edition.
Because I saw you playing Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight, I just assumed you bought the digital version.
No, he got this, and he took the 5 copy out and just resold it, because on eBay they're going for pretty high prices. So he made his money back. It's fine. Nice. But yeah, so we have all of them. I borrowed them from him. This is kind of interesting, because Thomas usually mooches from me on video games. He has in his room right now 3 or 4 Persona games of mine. He has Persona Q, he has Persona 4 Golden, he has Persona 4 Dancing All Night on the Vita, and maybe another one. And
Persona
so, like,
3 something?
Maybe, no, I don't have any physical copies of Persona 3. So I think that's the only 3. But like, yeah, so he has never bought a Persona game before, so I felt good just mooching off him for these
the
ones.
The cycle has come around.
It has.
Turn on time.
Yes. So I've been borrowing them in between bouts of him playing them furiously. Luckily, he's pretty obsessed with 5 because he started there and he's got to, you know, get number 1 in the world on every single song.
Of course.
Which he's already done on a couple of them. So I took 5. I played 5 first. Loved it. Let me say really quickly the trophy thing. I got into it because, I'll say this. So I'm playing it in Japanese and I'm playing it less thoroughly than I probably will when it comes out in English because the Kamu events, which are like the story material, I'm mostly just skipping through because I can understand some of it, but it's a lot of work, and I just kind of want to relax with them. So right. It's like, I will play these when they come out in English, but I'm skipping through that. Everything else, though, like, it's actually a very easy game to play, like, get all the stuff in with a relatively minor amount of Japanese knowledge. I was able to figure out most of the trophies and all this stuff. There's right. enough guides online and whatnot. But I had a lot of fun, and I was saying, I'm going to platinum this, and then I'm going to move on to 3, and I did everything to platinum it. The last thing I had to do was unlock the last, I think it was Ryuji's Kamyu, because he unlocks the last, his is the challenge hardest to get through, yeah, the last challenge thing, and I had done everything else in the game, and once I watched his last Kamyu and got the last, spoilers for these games, if you care about that,
yeah, I don't know what that means,
the last card in his room, then I would have done everything for all the trophies.
Okay,
and I do
yes,
that.
Right.
Do that. Trophies start popping. I watch the trophies pop. You know, I'm like, that didn't seem like everything. So I back out. I go into the trophy menu and I check. And I have every trophy in the game except 2. I don't have the platinum, which you need all the other ones for.
Yeah.
And I don't have the trophy for having all of the glasses accessories. And I look and I'm like, well, wait. There's a whole list of trophies. This is one of those games where, like, you have a lot of cascading trophies.
Yes.
Where, like, there is an overall silver trophy for getting every accessory for dancers in the game. But then there's, like, every glasses accessory, every headphone.
Like, I think there's half of all the accessories. Yeah. There's all the glasses, and yes. then there's all the accessories.
Yes. So I had every trophy except the glasses. And, of course, this is an impossibility because to have the other trophies, I had to have all the glasses. And I just sank. Because this has happened to me before.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
On at least one other occasion, and I know it's happened on another, and I don't remember what it is right now, but it's happened, where
yes.
PSN fucks up because their trophy system is so fucking bizarre in how it, like, stores it online and has to sync. It's very weird, and I just saw the trophies missing. I back out of the game. I started again hoping that, like, if I hang around in it enough, it'll just recognize, if I, like, reboot it enough, it'll recognize that...
Right.
It's there, and it'll pop the trophy. I tried all sorts of things. I deleted my save, put it in the cloud, brought it back down, reloaded it. I completely uninstalled the game and reinstalled it because it's just on disk. It took
right.
no effort, but, like, that didn't do it. I, like, got rid of the update, played it without all this stuff. I could not get it. That trophy is glitched for me. I don't know. I think what it might have been, the trophies are a little slow to pop in these games, I've noticed. What might have happened, and this is why I blame PSN, because this happened on Infinite Second Son in a different way for me, is that as I was watching the trophies pop, it seemed like they were done, so I backed out to check them, and I think that stopped the trophy from popping, and when I looked, it synced and thought it was updated, go back to the game, and it stopped. The ping or whatever didn't happen, and so I just never got it. But yeah, I have effectively platinumed Persona 5 Dancing Star Knight.
Well, so we both platinumed Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight.
Yes,
and neither of us have platinumed Persona 5 Dancing Star Knight, is the way to phrase it.
I guess so. But yes, then I moved on. I was very sad, but then I grabbed Persona 3, because my brother wasn't playing it, and immediately cheered up, because Persona 5 Dancing Star Knight is very good. Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight is great.
Yeah,
I do think there's a gap between them. I think it will largely depend also, though, on your... Like, if you prefer the Persona 5 music vastly or something, play that game.
Of course, yeah.
But, having played both of them very extensively now, my clock on both is about 9 hours to platinum them. I love both of these games.
That's so fast. Oh, yeah, because if you're skipping the Kamyu,
yeah, that's
obviously, because that's like 5 hours. There's 64 of those fucking things
right.
for, like, 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah, so... But anyway, I've enjoyed them immensely, but I think Persona 3, I think the remixes are better, I think the song lineup is better, I think the dances are even more creative, I think the difficulty is even more rewarding, I think the costumes are even better, but part of it is also, I just have so much more nostalgia for Persona 3, I've played it more times, it's been in my life longer. Like, Persona 5 is still so fresh,
right.
I don't get the same kick of, like, oh, there's my old friends again, it's like... Oh, I just saw you guys, you know? So it's a kick, but it's not the same thing. But yes, I think these games are amazing. You know, I'm not trying to put down the Persona 5 one by saying this. They are both great. They are both worth playing. If you don't want to wait for the English release, they're very accessible even in Japanese, unless you feel like you need to play the Kamyu stuff now.
Yeah.
But I love these games.
Yeah. No, I basically agree with your assessment. I have not finished playing all of Persona 5 Dancing Star Knight, though I have most of the songs done, like, this first time through.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like, you're doing everything. You're playing the songs on multiple difficulties and everything. And I do think I ultimately prefer the soundtrack and the kind of that stuff for Dancing Moon Knight. In particular, part of what it is, and we talked about this last week, is that Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight just has more stuff to pull from. And so I think in particular they have the three different Persona 3 portable songs, which add a lot of, like, just a diversity to...
Yes.
Because those songs sound very different than the normal Persona 3 songs. And everything in Persona 5 has to be pulled just from Persona 5 because, even, like, the anime was in production, so they don't even have, like, the anime songs.
Yeah, there. It's a weird sensation for me where, having played both, soundtracks extensively, the 5 one I got a little tired of near the end because it has, like... so many versions of Last Surprise and Rivers in the Desert. And yeah. Like, I love these songs, but that one feels a little, like, bloated, if anything. The 3 one is lean. Like, yeah. There is no fat on it, to the point where I wish it had a little more. Like, it does not have any version of Joy or Iwatodai Dorm or some of these songs that I think you could have really made a good dance out of. It doesn't even have the full version of
Kimi no Kyoku, Memories of You.
Yeah, Memories of You. It has the remix, but not the original version, which is not necessarily a complaint. It's just interesting to me.
I mean, I would prefer that to playing that song for 5 minutes over in credits, which is the weakest part of both of these games to me.
Yes, I agree. I think they picked the right one in doing Brand New Days for that, because it's, I think, a better dance one.
Because it's also that song is 5 minutes long, whereas Hoshi to Boku no To, the credits song from Persona 5, is 7 minutes. It's the full 7 minutes.
Yes.
Like, the other songs are, like, edited slightly. The both Brand New Days and Kimi to Boku no To are, or Hoshi to Boku no To, are the full unedited original versions of the songs. That's, like, just as original from the soundtracks.
Yes.
Like, these are the ones you need the radio edits for. There should not be a song longer than 4 minutes.
It's too long. Like, I don't mind the Persona 3 one that much. The problem is Hoshi to Boku no To, it's too long. And it's too quiet a song.
Yeah.
Like,
it's very slow.
I've tried it several times, and I can't figure out the note patterns like I can with almost every other song, like, just instinctively. Like, it's hard to hear where they want me to do the beats, because it's such a minimalistic... Like, I love that song. I don't think it should be in this game, maybe.
Yeah, like,
that way.
The remix is really good.
The remix is
the
fantastic.
The original version is just, like... I think you could do a radio edit version of it that would work. That's, like, about 4 minutes.
Yeah.
It's being weird. 7 minutes, it's so much. Because I just played it earlier today. It's just like, fucking, why is this like this in this game?
Yeah. But anyway, like, I guess I'll say this. Like, Persona 3 Dancing left me wanting more in the best way. Persona 5 Dancing, at the end, I was ready to be done with it. So, that's just kind of my general takeaway of, like, I think the 3 one is, I love pretty much every song. I think it's hit after hit after hit. 5 has a couple of slow spots for me.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So, again, I've not fully finished all the stuff in Persona 5. Because, and one of the things I am actually glad that I played the Persona 3 one first and then the 5 one is that it made the 5 one feel more fresh than I think it would have otherwise. Because one of the things I do really like about Persona 5 Dancing Star Knight is the menu stuff and the UI is so flashy, and they do such a good job of translating that from Persona 5, which obviously has, like, such a great, like, really distinctive UI design. And I did not realize how different the looks of the two games were, because I just assumed Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight kind of looks like Persona 4 Dancing All Night, just updated. And then, but going to Dancing Star Knight, that Persona 5 has such a distinct aesthetic. They do such a great job of translating that.
It really is cool, because I honestly didn't think about it until I played 3, because the 5 one is such a dead ringer for Persona 5.
Yeah.
Like, they just got it. But I will say, I was kind of equally impressed with the 3 UI in its own way, because Persona 3 is a very old game at this point. It's never had an HD remake like, Persona 4 the Golden did. So they kind of had to make a UI flavored like Persona 3, but from the ground up. And it looks so good. It's like, I want that Persona 3 like HD remake, where they like really bring all that style into a more modern aesthetic, because it looks very good. But yes, the Persona 5 one is... as Persona 5 is, ridiculously stylish.
Yeah. And it particularly made me really kind of nostalgic about... I think one of the things that worked for me is that the fact that I played Persona 5 in Japanese originally...
Yeah.
Like, the fonts are different between Persona 3 Dancing and Persona 5 Dancing, and the Persona 5 Dancing one is the font they use in Persona 5.
Yeah.
So it's like the normal text font that's not necessarily flashy, but just the normal one that's on the boxes, they're slightly different. And when I saw that, I'm like, wait, holy shit, like, this is more different, and like, the shape of the text boxes are slightly different. Like, every element of the UI is adjusted between the two games, and I really like that, because it makes them feel more distinct than they otherwise would.
Oh, absolutely. It's a really cool thing. Like, they don't feel like one game that got split in two.
Right.
They do feel like two separate Persona Dancing games. I think it's... you could question whether they are worth full $60
games.
They
should be $40 each, I think.
They should be $40. And who knows? The English version, that might be what they do. Who knows?
Right.
Japanese games are just expensive.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Did you see the digital version of this box set, which I don't even think has the soundtracks, is 180,000 yen?
No.
It's 18,000 yen. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, am I right? Yeah.
I can check. But
what am I? I'm trying to say it's $180. It's $40 yeah. more than the physical version, which is crazy.
It's a lot. And then there's like the DLC situation for these games sucks. You know,
yes.
like it's the Japanese DLC thing of like there's already I think two or three different paid songs you can do.
Yeah, like here's one disappointment is the Persona 3 game has none of the Persona 3 movie music.
Yes,
but More Than One Heart, which is probably the song you want to do first off, is paid DLC.
Yeah.
That's...
I mean, the one I most want is the Lotus Juice yes. one from the Midsummer Night's Dream.
I do, too.
Which you can see right now on Netflix, which I checked earlier today. No, not earlier today, a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And it is still out there.
Yes, no.
Our like, monthly check-in is, can you still watch Persona 3, the movie number 2, Midsummer Night's Dream on Netflix? Yes, you can. It's still only that one.
Yes, it's very weird. But it has the best song, so...
It does.
There you go. But yeah, it's a weird situation with the DLC, but what were we talking about? With the games, the UI is stylish.
Yes.
They feel separate.
The soundtracks are very distinct because yes. the styles of the two soundtracks that they pull from are very distinct.
Yeah, you want to just talk about some of our favorite remixes?
Yes, let's talk about some of the songs.
Let's start with three.
Okay, yes.
Okay, first off, I've got the track listing here. Our Moment, the theme song to Persona 3 Dancing
yep.
Moon Knight, is one of my single favorite Persona songs ever. It's probably my favorite song in either of these collections, other than maybe the Lotus Juice remix for... that we'll talk about in a second, but it's if you listen to the lyrics, especially the full 3.5 minute version that is free DLC, and the second verse it has, it is this great song. It's positioned as like the characters looking back as adults on the time they had as kids.
Yeah.
And there's this line in the second verse about like, you know, remembering our days of youth, you know, it was so difficult, but it was the best year because doing all these things, we were so close. Like, it is this great, like, adult perspective on this thing they did as kids. And I just think it's this great, like, thematic look back at what that game is about. I get a little emotional every time I hear it. I think it's an amazing song. I think it mixes yeah. Lotus Juice and Yumi Kawamura amazingly. It's fun to dance to. It's very challenging in the full game.
Yeah.
But I love that song.
Yeah. It's a great song. I also have, straight from the Japanese PSN store, the PS Vita version of the triple pack with some of the DLC is 17,042 yen, and the PS4 version is 18,230 yen.
Yes, and as a comparison, it's 140,000 yen for the box, or 14,000 yen on Amazon yeah. Japan, so it is $40 more.
Yes, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So maybe if you're think about getting the physical versions of those games if you're
yes.
importing them. But yes, I agree, I think, and that's true for both of the OP songs.
Oh,
I
the Groovy is great too, yeah.
Yeah, they're both really good, they're very stylish, they've got... They do the same thing that Dance does for Persona 4 Dancing, which is it sort of like puts in some of like the familiar melodies from some mm-hmm. of the iconic songs from the soundtracks, but it's very much its own thing.
Yes.
Let's talk about Lotus Juice. Let's just talk about the Lotus Juice remix of what that's. I can never remember what the name of the song is in the English soundtrack.
Let me look it up while we're talking.
Yeah.
You talk about why it's so great.
It's just.
Look it up.
I mean, because one of the things is that it is a sort of a not. It's not a song that when you're listening to the Persona 3 soundtrack, you'd think to pull for a remix. It's a totally good song. It's like a boss song, kind of like or said like build up to a boss sequence from Persona 3. But it just lets Lotus Juice just fucking go wild with this song. And I think one of my favorite things about it that I appreciate about the best remixes in these games is that it's not just sort of playing the song and then like putting a little like drum beat on it, which is some of like the weaker remixes. It is just totally transforming the song, taking the song as a platform, pulling some of like samples from the song, like the woman who's doing the backing vocals and stuff. But just, like, going just fucking buck wild with it.
Yes, the English translation of the song is a deep mentality.
Yes, which is, if, like, looking at the kanji, even if I don't know how to pronounce the first kanji compound, I can tell you that it means deep.
Okay, so, good.
It's deep, like, deep consciousness.
It is so good. And you're right, like, and I actually think these two games have more of the remixes that kind of remake the song than the 4 game did. Like, there are some that just completely put the songs in new light. In this case, it's hard to even say it's a remix of a deep mentality. It starts that way, but it goes...
But once you get 15 seconds in and Lotus Juice just right up in your ear, if you're listening with the headphones, goes... remix.
It's so, it really is. It is one of Lotus Juice's finest hours. I, for people who don't play Persona but listen to us talk about it, you might think that our love of Lotus Juice is ironic.
No.
It is fucking not. He is legitimately one of the best rappers I have ever heard. And when he just gets into a flow and is let loose, it is unbelievable. This one also has lyrics that kind of look back from the perspective of the protagonist who, spoiler, dies at the end of Persona 3.
Yeah.
And they're really beautiful lyrics. They also include the word ass spank, which is amazing. But it is, no. And
self-implying
then, like,
Spartacus again.
So
don't
good.
Know what it means.
And then, like, the second half of the song, when it gets into, like, the deep beat that's going on, like, because it also in the game is so fun to play.
Mm.
And I also want to say this. I think I've shared this on the podcast before. I know I've told you and my brother this. That for years, and this is just since I played Persona 3 the first time in 2012 or 13.
Yeah.
2013. Whenever I hear Lotus Juice, the person I see is Junpei from Persona 3. I see Junpei doing the rapping. It's impossible for me to get that out of my head. Sometimes you just get those associations, but Junpei is Lotus Juice for me. And you know who does the dance for this Lotus Juice remix?
It's true, yes.
It's motherfucking Junpei. And when I saw that, I was so excited because you know what, Sean? I had heard this song on the soundtrack before I played the game, and I sat down at about 10 p.m. at night to start playing Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight, and I played the game on normal song by song until I got to this one, and it's in the last batch. I played almost the entire soundtrack in one sitting just to get to this song and see whether or not it was Junpei, and it was, and I felt more vindicated than I have ever been about anything.
Yeah.
It was great.
I mean, when I was listening to it for the first time, I was like listening to the soundtrack while walking around, because I also listened to the soundtracks before I got all that far into the game. I think I played like the first four songs or something,
then
I took a walk and was listening to it. And when I got there, I got like a minute or something into the song, and just immediately it's like, I don't tweet very often because I think Twitter is awful. I think everything that Twitter does to our society and us as people is terrible. But I have to put this message out into the world that we don't deserve Lotus Juice because this song it's so fucking good. Because it's also like five songs in one. It moves through all these sequences that build on each other.
It's only 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
It's just a brilliant fucking song.
I'm going to look at some other favorites. The Brand New Days remix, the Yuyo Yupe remix, is wonderful. That's already a great song. I like the bass version of it that's in here. It's the lazy end credits thing, but I think it's the best of those between 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, I agree.
Because like, it's a more dance-worthy song than Nevermore or Hoshito Bokuroto.
It's also the shortest of all those.
Also the shortest, yes. But that remix is great. It really recasts the song in a great new light.
It's got like a good rock feel to it that like kind of picks the song up a bit.
Yeah,
yeah.
The two like overworld songs, When the Moon's Reaching Out Stars and Want to Be Close, I like both of those remixes a lot.
Yeah,
they're very good.
Particularly When the Moon's Reaching Out Stars is one of my favorite ones to play.
Yes.
I think it's got a really good beat to it.
Yeah,
I like Yukari's dance there.
Yeah. The Deep Breath remix, the Yu Miyake remix, is really interesting because it takes it from being a Lotus Juice song to a Yumi Kawamura song.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very different version. And on the soundtrack, when I first heard it, I wasn't sure. But when I played it, it plays really well.
Yeah, basically, that's the true of every song I've played in these games, is that even the ones that when I listened to were kind of iffy when I played them. Because when you play them, you see such a different side of the song. Is that I appreciated them a lot more.
Yeah. I don't love the Mass Destruction remix. I think it's the weakest one. It's because it's all like go, 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 and it never slows down.
Yes. It's the antithesis to the Lotus Juice one, of that it never, other than it's got a great opening.
Yes.
The opening to it is fantastic. But then once it gets into the song, it's the same basic guitar riff for the entire song with like this big pounding fucking drum line. And once it starts doing that, it never stops doing that for the whole song.
Yeah.
Bad remix. It is. I do really like playing it though, because I think it has the highest BPM of any song in both games.
It's really fast.
And I like playing the high BPM songs because it's just all reflex, and I don't have to like the worst. And it's one of the reasons why I don't like these sort of like Hoshito Bokuroto stuff, is that if I'm sitting there having to wait for the notes for too long, I get really impatient, and I'm bad at those.
Yeah.
It's just like, I want to be interacting with the game, and when you're playing the Mass Destruction, it just fucking goes. So it's probably like the biggest delta of any of the songs between the quality of listening to it and the quality of playing it, in my opinion.
Also, I think this is hilarious. They made that a Ken song.
Yes.
And it's just Ken rocking out on his like...
He's got his fucking spear.
Yeah. It's great.
It's very good. Light the Fire Up in the Night I really like the remix. I like both the remix, yes. And then they also sort of did a little work to combine the two versions in the normal one
yeah.
that they pull from Persona Q. Both of those are good. That also being another Ken dance,
yes.
And I like his Ken, the dance where, like, at the beginning, he does a little, like, shake, butt shake, and
yes.
starts dancing. It's very good. It's very
great. I love both of the Velvet Room remixes.
Yes.
They are amazing, and the one that you do with the four guys doing the group dance.
Yes, the
more
battle
like,
for everyone's soul. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that's so good.
It's very good. But for me, the best dance, and probably actually the one that I enjoy playing the most, is the poem for everyone's soul. That is, I don't know, and don't tell me what it is for Persona 5 because I haven't gotten there. But for at least for this one, Elizabeth's fucking dance
is so good.
It's so good. And just everything about the Elizabeth character in Persona 3 is great. Dancing Moon is so fucking good. And that dance is both the coolest dance and the stupidest dance.
Yes.
Like she like waffles between those two places. And but the song has just got that. I forget what the musical terminology for it is, but it's that like one and two and three and four.
Syncopation?
Yes, that.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of beat to it, and it's like really fun to play. It's kind of
yeah.
hard to get into that rhythm at first, but once you hit it, I really love playing that song.
I love having Margaret there as your co-dancer.
Yes.
You That's great.
Margaret and Labrys from Persona 4 Dancing is also there. She can pop up.
Oh, I have not seen her yet in that
yeah.
one.
She's
that's
cool.
great. No, that's fantastic. And I have to say, Elizabeth, overall, I did, when I was skipping through the commus, I would often just slow down and listen
just,
to...
Yeah, because even if you don't know what she's saying, the line deliveries are some of the most absurd acting.
She is the most entertaining actress to listen to. Mayumi Sawashiro, who you love.
Mayuki Sawashiro.
Mayuki Sawashiro. What did I say?
Mayumi Sawashiro. Or something.
I'm so sorry. I don't mean it. I don't mean to.
It's okay. Yeah. That's the reason why I give the rewards that you don't.
Say it again.
Miyuki Sawashiro.
Miyuki Sawashiro. I yeah. will try to remember it this time. She's great. But yes. And also, like, it reminded me of, like, what a good adaptation that was to English. Like, the
mm-hmm.
woman who does
yeah.
her in English does a very good job of that same kind of... She sounds like an insane person, but, like, the most, like, lovable one
yeah.
in the world.
And playing it in Japanese, I think, one of the effects they go for, and there's, like, it's really weird, is that she both simultaneously sounds like a, like, very cliche Japanese stereotype of a foreigner trying to speak Japanese,
yeah.
and someone speaking the most, like, classical, formal Japanese that, like, still exists at the same time on top of each other. And it's such a bizarre effect, and it's something that, like, I don't even... It's impossible to sort of describe, and it's possible to replicate. I don't think anybody else could do that performance.
No.
It's so off the wall and crazy, but it's so fucking fun.
Yep.
Again, even if you don't understand anything about Japanese, just hearing her talk is entertaining, because it's so
totally
crazy.
I like the Burn My Dread remix.
I like that one a lot. That's actually one of my favorite remixes for Persona 3.
Yeah, and then the three portable ones, Time, Way of Life, and Wiping All Out...
Mm-hmm.
They hit those out of the park.
Yes, because that's also where I think the other MVP that's not Elizabeth for Persona 3 is Fuka. To me.
Fuka, yes, I was going to say
her,
that.
Her dances are so good. She also, she has, I think, outside of Elizabeth, the best kamu events in Persona 3 dancing, because part of it is English Fuka is bad.
Yes.
It was just a bad performance. It was calibrated poorly. Japanese Fuka is really good, and
yes.
and she's not in the movies that much, so it's like you don't. She's one of the more sidelined characters, so this is the most like experience I have with Japanese Fuka, and she's really good.
I love Japanese Fuka, and because she is sidelined a little bit, but she is such a big part of that first movie,
yes,
and they
yeah.
do her so well. And then there's the scenes with her in like the fourth movie, anyway. But yeah, she it's the one it's Wiping All Out. Lotus Juice has that lyric about like quarter inch spangles, like three dots connect rectangle,
yeah.
and she does the like she goes up and does the three dots connecting.
Yes,
I love that
because that's something to talk about. Is it's true of Dancing All Night, and is certainly true of Persona 3 and Persona 5 Dancing. Is they do such a brilliant job of finding ways to get these characters' like personalities to reflect
yes.
their dancing style. And it's one of the things I love so much about these games is that I know nothing about dancing, but I am impressed by the choreography and how much of the, like the spirit of the characters reflected. And Fuka's is one of the most interesting because hers is so non-traditional. So I don't know what that style of dancing is called, but it's basically all centered around her arm and hand movements, and there's
yep.
very little body movement related associated with it. So it has this very like stylish, cool look to it, but that is also, not energetic in the way that, like, Fuka is a very laid-back character that doesn't have a lot of energy, but she's very earnest. And there's something about that that reflects her personality so well to me.
One of my favorite moments in either of these games is in Time. There's this moment in the remix where it goes into, like, this old-timey, like, scratchy,
like, speakeasy kind of version of the song.
And she slows down and does this, like, little, you know, speakeasy, almost burlesque kind of, like, little thing. It's so good.
Yes, and the way they characterize her in the whole game is great, and it's I love Fuka, which is something I would not have said if I only played the English version of Persona 3.
Yes, I really liked the Kimi no Kyoku
remix.
Remix is so good because that one's done by the man himself, Shoji Meguro.
And I do love that Shoji Meguro saved like the juiciest remixes for himself on both soundtracks. Is the Kimi no Kyoku and Life Will Change. He swiped both of those up. It's like, I'll handle it, guys. Don't worry.
Yep, and he did great. It's one of the best remixes. Because honestly, I know that song so well, I started listening to it without looking at the title. Because it's also weird, they spell Kimi out. They don't use the kanji. So I didn't recognize it at first, the title. But anyway, and I was like, what song is this? And I'm like, is that... Oh my god, that's it. Because it's on the beat of a different song. It's very interesting how he does it. It's great.
It's a really elegant... I mean, all the Atlas remixes kind of, like, privilege a lot of the original track over remixing it very heavily, but they do, but some of the other remixes, like, Mass Destruction is not a huge remix of that song, it is mostly that song with, like, guitar and drum parts layered on top of it.
Yeah.
Compared to that, the Atlas ones, I think, have a very elegant way of, like, adding to the song without, like, making it feel like you're listening to something totally different.
Yep.
And that, Meguro's remixes are like that of... adding just, like, a little bit of a, like, spice to it, kind of changing the order. So, like, he makes all the choruses come at the end of that song. So you go through the verses, and then you go through all the choruses together. Like, those little changes do a lot to change the feel of the song in the way that's, like, feels very elegant to me.
It's also so fun to dance to.
Yes.
And the group, that's the girls' group dance for that game, and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
They both have a live song from the Persona Live 2017. They're both great. This one is a song... What is Laser Beam
Laser
from?
Laser Beam, it's from Persona Q. I think it's from the Persona 3 side of Persona Q, so you might not have seen it.
But I've heard it on the soundtrack.
Yes.
But that is the first time I think I've seen the video of Lotus Juice as a human being.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, right, he's just a Japanese dude.
Yeah. It was like, I mean, weird... do you want to see a picture of Lotus Juice right now? Because I brought him up on my laptop, and he's a sexy man.
He's a sexy man. His hair is bleached, because of course it is.
Yes,
it and, has to be. But again, I always saw him in my head as an anime character. So to see him as a real person was a shock, but he is just as cool live as he is on the records, and that live song is great.
Yeah. It's another one of those, I think it's one of the reasons why I really like the Persona 3 soundtrack more than the Persona 5 dancing one, is that you have just a couple of those, mostly spearheaded by Lotus Juice, of surprise pulls that, like, I would never have guessed ever that Laser Beam would even be on the soundtrack, let alone the one they pull from the live show. But it's such a good pick because it's different. It's got an interesting feel to it. It works well in a live setting, which is also true of Rivers in the Desert.
Yeah, is
and
there
it
an
features
album?
Him so well.
Do you know if there's an album out of that live show? Because it's
there
so
has to be.
Good.
They always like okay. that's they always.
I might have to import that because that Rivers in the Desert one is my favorite version of Rivers in the Desert.
It's very good. Yeah, it's because that's such a good pull for a live song because it is. It has so much energy to it. It's such that's great. I like that they pull the live versions for these soundtracks because it's way more interesting to me than playing over like the credits video or something. But playing over a live performance of it is interesting and different. I'm fine with that not being a like character dance.
Yep. And then in terms of the songs that are not remixed, I love what they do with Burn My Dread, where it's the final big group dance. That's very well done.
Yeah.
I like that Mass Destruction combines the verses from the base game and the episode Aegis.
Yes.
When Moon's Reaching Out Stars, the base version of that, is one of my favorites to play in this game.
Yes.
And it
makes me like that song more than I did in the original soundtrack. There's something
else. Yeah, it's really good, and I realized I know that song so well. I King Crazied it on my second time.
Nice.
Like, I just felt it.
Yeah, a lot of the original tracks have that feel to it of like, oh, fuck, I just know the song. I can just get into this groove.
Soul Phrase, I think actually works as a dance very well.
Yes, that's one of the Persona 3 portable songs.
Yep. My brother had no idea what that was, because that's also weird. It does not use Lotus Juice or Yumi Kawamura.
No, yeah, I forget what his name is, but it's a different guy who, like, that's his only song on that soundtrack.
But I've always liked that song.
Yeah, it's good.
My other one, so... both of these games, we talked about this last week, have a little more in the way of videos and clip packages and stuff. it bored me more on Persona 5 because what they do with them in Persona 3 is so exciting.
Yeah.
The Burn My Dread Last Battle thing,
yes,
the clip package they put together for that, and the way they like did this like neon cutting, like flashy editing, it's one of my favorites to play.
Yeah, it's basically like an AMV built for it, like from with the cutscenes from the game, and it's one of the things that makes you appreciate how like weird and sort of like just odd the direction for those cutscenes were in that game, that they come across really well in that format, and they're visually interesting enough to carry it.
Yeah.
Yes, that's really good. Moonlight Serendipity. That's the ending credits song. I like a lot. It is not as good as a Persona 5 dancing ending credits song, because that one is fucking amazing.
Neither of them really grabbed me. I'd have to listen to the 5-1 again.
You have to listen to the 5-1 again. Okay. It is so fucking good.
Okay.
Moonlight Serendipity does not stand out that much. It kind of reminds me of the Persona 4 Arena 2 Ultimax. Yeah. Ending credits song that's like, it's fine, but you kind of forget about it after you've listened to it. The Persona 5 one is very good.
Okay. I will keep it in mind. I will go back to it. Is that it for Persona 3's music, then?
One thing I want to just sort of shout out is I like, for both Persona 3 and Persona 5 dancing, I like the menu songs.
Oh, they're
really
Persona
3, it's Party Over Here.
Yep.
And I just like hearing, I think it's Lotus Juice every once in a while, and that song just going like, Party Over There, Party Over Here, Party Over Here. It's like, yeah. And then, it's very good. Private Room Side Number 2, which is the one that plays when you explore the rooms for the women, is really good.
It's my favorite one. Yeah. I noted that too. Yeah.
It's just like, especially because it kind of goes through a full cycle of the song in 30 seconds, and it goes through it again with like this little violin backing track. It's really good.
It's very good. What do you think of the mechanic of exploring the rooms?
I like it.
It's cool.
Something that I haven't done it yet in Persona 5, and I'm looking forward to it in Persona 5 because you don't ever go to those people's rooms in Persona 5, whereas in Persona 3, it's cool, but those rooms are featured in the game, so it's not as surprising.
And they're also mostly in the Iwatodai dorm.
Yes.
Which means there's more variety in 5. But it's like just such a... I wouldn't have thought that would be in the game, but it's just a cool little thing to get to do. And it is fun to poke around and like... Because they're basically just like little dioramas you go around in.
Yeah.
But, you know, just to see that like... Oh, of course... why am I forgetting his name? The guy who punches stuff.
Akihiko.
Why am I forgetting Akihiko? I want to say Akechi. I say he's not even in either of these. But no, Akihiko, of course he has just a freestanding shower in his room. So he can work out and then go take a shower. I like that Mitsuru's room is like very upscale and rich and all that stuff.
She's got a big fucking TV in that room. Everybody else has got these shitty little tube TVs. She's got this like TV takes up the whole wall.
Yep. I like that, you know, Ken's room has all these like little toys and stuff in it. Junpei's is a mess and he has lots of manga.
I love it, Junpei's, because he's one of the harder ones to advance because I think he's like accessories or something.
He's the last one I finished
hard
today.
To, hard to get up. And so I think his was the last room I saw. And I was so excited to see because everybody else's room is super clean. And because you can walk around and see little messages, obviously in Japanese, so it's like, of like, oh, if you look at this thing and click on it, there'll be a little thing that pops up. And I was just very excited to get to Junpei's because everybody else is very clean. It's like, you're a messy bastard, Junpei. It's a good room. Yeah.
It's great. So let's talk about Persona 5.
Okay.
Groovy is a great song.
Yes.
I like Our Moment even more. It hit me harder, but Groovy is so good. There's that like break in the middle of the song that in the video, it's the protagonist like dancing backwards
through the street.
The street. That moment is like every... And I played this song a million fucking times. It just... It's electric every time.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great video.
Yeah. Getting into some of the remixes. The Wake Up, Get Up, Get Out There remix is okay. The dance is okay. It was not my favorite.
Yeah. And it's actually like, it's something that in the soundtrack they pair this and Last Surprise are both right next to each other. The first Last Surprise remix.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a big mistake on how you order the soundtrack.
Yes.
Because they both sound like they're the same remix to me.
They do, yes.
Of that, because they do the same kind of like drum beat kind of backing thing and a little bit of guitar in the background. It's like, this is, you needed to separate these because they sound the exact same to me.
The Beneath the Mask one is good.
Yes, that one's very good. I like that one a lot.
I love the Whims of Fate
one. Yes, that's one of the... And it's something that when you... Because when I was first listening to the Persona 5 dancing soundtrack, I was kind of disappointed until I hit the Whims of Fate. And then there's just a really solid stretch there for a couple of songs. It's like, this soundtrack is also very good.
Yeah, Whims of Fate. My favorite remix in this one is Willpower.
Yes, the Shacho remix.
Yes.
Yes, it's so good. This is another one that is utterly transformative.
Well, because what they've done is they've taken Willpower, which is one of the boss songs, and they've taken the dungeon theme for the space dungeon.
Right,
and because it's both of those songs put together, because this is a Haru dance, and it's the dungeon where her dad is, that's in the game. And But it's an amazing song. It's going to be a theme song on this podcast very soon. I love it to death. I played it over and over. Haru is the equivalent of Fuka in this game to me.
Yes, yes. She's got the ballet dances.
Yep, yep, and hers are so well. I mean, Haru is already one of my favorite five characters, and I think they did such a pitch-perfect job of capturing her character.
Mm-hmm.
Really well, and I love Willpower. Yeah.
I also just love, so for those who don't know, Shacho in Japanese means like company president, and so Shacho Remix, every time I see that, and then when it starts playing, like this is a song, when again, I like to take long walks, and so that's when I kind of listen to these soundtracks, and when I got to that, and then it gets to the, hey, part of the soundtrack and plays that the first time, I hadn't looked at what the song was, I immediately looked down at the song and just said, fuck yeah! Literally out loud, like while walking, and looked around to make sure nobody was around me. It's like, it's so good. It's got such an upbeat thing to it. Then, especially once it gets to the end and the big, like, sort of melodic guitar solo comes in, and what they do with that is so good.
Yes.
Fuck it. That soundtrack is so awesome.
Then we have our first of three versions of Rivers in the Desert.
Right. Yes.
Which is probably that and Last Surprise both have three versions, which I think is overkill.
Yeah.
But I do love Rivers in the Desert. The remix is good, but I think that song is kind of tough to improve on.
Yeah, it's a one thing I do appreciate is that it's like a nice condensed version of Rivers in the Desert.
It's 2.5 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't do that much to change the song. It sort of throws a little bit of like electronica in there a little bit. But it's mostly like a good like condensed version of the build-up and then release at the end where the song just goes crazy, sort of like pseudo-dubstep.
Yep. Next, we have my other favorite remix in this game, Hoshito Bokuroto, the Tofu Beats remix.
Yeah.
Is so
another
good.
good handle. Shacho and Tofu Beats, they should make an album together.
Indeed. And this one like does so many cool things with the song, but my favorite thing is they build this like new chorus of like, you know, scat kind of music out of just random sounds from the singer Lin and put it all together. It's really good.
Yes, and then particularly when the song, you get to the end and it's like the, at the end of like Hoshito Bokuroto, there's like 30 seconds of her just sort of like wailing with the beat, and what they do with that section I think is also really smart.
It's so good. Blooming Villain Remix is good.
Yes. Yeah.
I like that one. The Life Will Change Meguro Remix. You've heard that, right?
Yes. It's, of course. Yeah. Very good. Yeah, it's very good, of course.
And then Rivers in the Desert Live is so amazingly, perfectly wonderful. Like, Lin is singing like she's being chased. It is amazing. It is, like, hardcore, out of this world.
Yes, it's just, it's, you know, it's just an amazing fucking song. It might be the best boss music in any video game for me.
Yeah, it is.
It's just so good. And it's again, for a live song, it has the right kind of energy that makes it an interesting version of the song to listen to.
Because I'm generally someone who prefers live versions of songs I like. And this is just like, that is, it's because there is something you get, an energy with a good live performance that just cannot be replicated in a studio.
Yeah.
And this one so has that. And the video has a bunch of people dressed up as characters from the game going around doing interpretive dancing, and that is wonderful.
Good. Yes.
All right. We've got... So out of the ones that are... Because this one has more of just the bass songs in the game being used as dances.
Yeah.
And a lot of them I really do like. I love Price as one.
Yeah, I have not gotten there yet in my game. I think it's one of the last ones.
Price, Life Goes On is cool.
Yeah, Life Goes On is very good. Because that's the like test-taking music from Persona 5 that is so much better than that song needs to be. It's crazy.
It so is. I really like Keeper of Lust. Like, a lot of these like ones that you wouldn't necessarily think they would have brought in, but they did. I think the Rivers in the Desert album one feels a little redundant with the other two, but I do like it. Last Surprise is the one that is the big like burlesque show with all the girls, and I do think it's uncomfortably fan service-y.
Yeah, I have not gotten there yet.
Okay, sorry if I spoiled it.
That's fine.
Okay.
I assumed that there was going to be a big dance one with the girls, because there was in Persona 3.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, it's good. Like I said, looking at it, I do think it's a little thin in places.
Yeah, I mean, it has, like, three fewer remixes than the Persona 3 one.
Yeah.
So.
And you have not played the big last song yet, so I'm not going to talk about that.
Nope.
It's good, though. I don't like the full Hoshito Bokuroto. It's too much.
So long.
It's so long. And then One Night Break is the closest song, which you say is great.
It's so good.
And I'm sure it is. I wonder why. I think I only played that one once.
Yeah,
so.
It's got such a good hook at the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's great. Climb the Stage Together is also the mini music, very good.
Very
and I just
good.
Like hearing Lin go, climb the stage together. And it's like, I don't know why they put those lyrics in the songs, because they just kind of say it over and over again.
The private room music in these is also good when you get there. But yeah, these are two solid fucking soundtracks. I think pretty well on par with the Persona 4 one. I think I like the 3 most of all 3 games.
Yeah.
But, man, they did a really good job on all these dancing games, didn't they?
One song we overlooked from Persona 3 that I really like is the song that plays when you finish a song.
Yes.
Because with the Persona 5 one, they just kind of do, I think, what Persona 4 did, which is take the in-battle music and kind of, like, put a good beat on it and stuff.
Yeah.
For Persona 3, what is it? They mix it with... Is it like the full like album version of Want to Be Close or something?
I think so. Yeah.
So it's like they mix the in battle music from Persona 3 with like the melody from another song, and it's really good.
I had to keep like stopping myself to listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. So, yeah, but overall, yeah, the soundtracks are great. I do want to shout out the Kamu events because I think they are so good, and it's obviously something that. Like, I'm excited for the English versions to come out so that you can play them because the Kamu events are so much better than they need to be. They do such a good job of capturing the characters, little, like, personalities and intricacies, playing with them, particularly with these sort of flashier characters like Elizabeth and Futaba from Persona 5 have had some really fun ones. And they're just smartly written. I think, honestly, it's the best... Like, I haven't... With the exception of Persona Q because I haven't played it. Of the Persona spin-offs I've played... And kind of including the additional material in Persona 4 The Golden, I think this is the best writing for any of those I've seen because it doesn't fall into the trap of characterizing the characters, which is, I think is something that happened with the Persona 4 cast particularly, was like each character had like Chie was Steak Kung Fu Girl, and that was all she had in the Persona 4 spinoffs, and it got really redundant. It's one of the things that made the Persona 4 dancing story mode really kind of repetitive and slow. Whereas this... They capture so much more of, like, the full totality of the characters, and there's a richness to, like, me doing, like, with Persona 5 and me playing some of those. Like, Ryuji is so refreshing and interesting because it's his full version of his character, and they don't just make him a giant moron, which is what I feel like it was, like, the Persona 4 Arena version. He would just be a big idiot, and it would be funny sometimes, and then it would go on and on and on as, like, that was funny, like, the 2 times he did that joke, and then that's the only joke you do. With this, there's a nice balance of humorous ones and kind of, like, more honest character ones. And the Persona 3 one has ones that, like, are way sadder than you'd think they'd be because it's like, I know where this game is going. And there's something so brutal about giving these characters this, like, one dream that they all have a party together in this dream that lasts forever. But when they wake up, they forget it. That's the saddest fucking idea that came out of, like, this, like, very crude narrative necessity to justify the game's existence and using the characters. And it hurts so bad in some of those, like... This is not going to be as happy as you think it is after this. Guys, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I can't speak to the narrative side of the Commus or the writing, but I will say, I think as a gameplay system, this is perfect.
It's much better than the visual novel thing in Persona 4, which is too intrusive.
Well, and like I'm glad they did it in Persona 4 Dancing All Night. I think it's what they needed to do to like get their foot in the door for that crazy dancing spinoff game,
sure,
you know?
Yeah.
And I do like that story. Like I love having all the Konamine stuff. I wouldn't trade that out. But that also was like, it was a totally separate thing. You barely danced in it. It was like 20 fucking hours long.
Yeah.
It was just too much. This is perfect, where like the focus is on the gameplay, on the dancing. And as rewards for doing tasks, you get to unlock Kamu events. And that reward is this meaty 3 to 5 minute little event. And then that will in turn unlock more stuff to go use. So it much more exemplifies the Persona series ideal of story feeding into gameplay and gameplay feeding into story.
Yeah.
Much more than just a straight up visual novel ever did. And so, like, I'm very excited to play the full story stuff. But even without that, it was kind of just like, okay, what task do I have to fulfill? Because it also becomes like this achievement system within the game that tells you kind of how to play it and what to go do. But it also means you can go do it on whatever difficulty you want, in all these different kinds of ways, with all these permutations, whereas Persona 4 dancing was, you play through really easy versions of the songs for 20 hours, and then you can go dance.
Yeah.
So I just think they hit the nail right on the head of how to put the story stuff into the game.
Yeah.
And I think if you're waiting for the English version, be excited, because there's so much good stuff to do.
Yeah, and it is a really smart in how it breaks up the pacing of the game as well, because the way I started playing it was play like 3 or 4 songs, kind of like get to the end of where you are and like unlock the next batch of songs, and then go to the Commus, and you probably have 4 or 5 Commu events, because there's 8 characters and 8 events for each of them. And so there's 64 of these fucking things, but none of them are longer than like 4 or 5 minutes. And so it's fun to just go into like, okay, I've got a bunch of these now unlocked. I'm going to play through some of these and then go back and play through the music and with the new outfits I unlocked. And it adds a different sort of like flow and pace to the game that I think works really well, because it gets exhausting with any rhythm game to just play song after song after song after song after song, because you're gonna, you know, it's an intensive kind of thing, particularly if you're playing it on like the hardest difficulty like you can. It's like, you're gonna be tired at the end of that.
It was the one downside for me not knowing enough Japanese to watch those Kami events, is I did find myself getting exhausted, but like, I was so wired, I would have to like pull myself away from the game.
You should not play these games before you go to bed.
It's like, I did the Persona 3, I did it in 3 days.
Fuck
is how long it's. So I just binged this fucking game last night. Before, so Saturday night, I played until 2 in the morning.
Duh.
Couldn't get to sleep until 3. Yeah. Woke up at 10 and then went and played more until like 2 p.m. and finished it. I never do that with games anymore. I think the last game I like full on did that with was maybe Arkham Knight in 2015, because it was during the summer and we were like off from school, and I just that's all I did for a week. This was not a week, this was like 2 or 3 days, but it was like, oh fuck, there's a reason I don't do this anymore. I was just sore. But yeah.
Yeah, especially again with a game like this that, like, if you're playing it on the harder difficulties, it is like legitimately can be physically taxing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so good. Alright, Persona's great, we love it. Hopefully we get that English announcement. Is there any chance these just don't come out in English?
I don't think so. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't come out. Like, Persona's... Yeah. Like, particularly because Persona 5 was by far the best-selling Persona game overseas. It would be weird to me. Especially since Persona 4 Dancing came out over here.
Yeah, I would have no reason to think they wouldn't. Every single spinoff has. It's just weird that they're out, and there still has not been even, like, a little... Like, we're going to put them out in the West.
Yeah.
There's been none of even that. So... I don't know. Yeah, I hope they do, and I will buy them again, and I will platinum them again. I'm excited.
Yes, I will probably not buy the English versions.
That's completely fair for you.
It'd be a bit much.
Yes.
But it is something that, like, fuck, like, playing the Persona 3 one with the Japanese characters and everything, I'm going to have to play that game again in Japanese now.
You should.
I should.
I am going to, at some point this month, finally go in and play Episode Aigis. I've tried several times. But, like, hearing Brand New Days again was like, I've never gotten through that whole thing. I need to. We are working on a project of our new top 10 games list, and I feel like I should have that under my belt. So, yeah.
Yeah, I need to play Persona 3 again. And then it was particularly, I just had this moment playing through one of the Mitsuru Kami events where I was like, I never finished Mitsuru's, because that was the second Persona game I played. So I wasn't the Persona freak I am now that, like, you know, I played through Persona 5 twice, once in Japanese, once in English, and both times 100%ed my social links and my fucking Persona compendium. I was not that man when I played through Persona 3. I was weak back then.
Yes.
Now I am strong. Now I would 100% Persona 3. So that's going to be the thing I have to do now.
All right. We will see you guys next Monday with the first of 3 E3 podcasts. We'll be doing daily Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then we will die.
Yep, E3's on the horizon. Stay safe out there. It's going to be dangerous.